It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yeah, sorry about the extended drum loop, but dadgummit, sometimes I don't have all my little doodads together when I go to start the program, and this was one such evening, doggone it. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is the 12th day of November, 2020. There are, ciphering. There are, let's see, 49 days left in 2020. 49 days for us to get used to the idea of it going away, and I don't think that's going to take a lot of getting used to. No. And by the time December 31st gets here, you know, I just want to say that I hope, and because I sit around thinking about things like this, I hope that ABC TV will have the common decency not to have a New Year's Rockin' Eve 2020. Because I suspect there are a lot of us who would prefer to use New Year's Eve this year for a sober, I know, dangerous word, right? A sober remembrance of the more than 240,000 Americans who entered 2020 but did not exit it. Now, I don't mean to start the program on a down note, but I've just been looking at how, you know, as the days wane and the year wanes, I don't want to know. And frankly, I would be really, really happy if there were no New Year's Day football bowl games. Because remember, no matter where you are in this country, If some state government is allowing you into a stadium to attend a football game, they are doing so not because that state doesn't have a coronavirus problem, but because that state has inept governance that simply doesn't give a good goddamn about the coronavirus problem. And in light of the fact that four SEC games were. And even talking about sports in the most tangential fashion seems obscene and vulgar. Four SEC football games were at least postponed this week. Ohio State versus Maryland has been canceled. Yeah, you know, please, we can get back to it when we get the coronavirus under control, but not now. Nitwit Nero has lost his bid for re-election, and so we can have done with this ignorant notion that somehow he saved football. God almighty! Let's just focus on getting out of the year. Please, please. The CDC even is saying, look, if you're hell-bent on having a family gathering for Thanksgiving or Christmas, do it outside. Well, that's going to be a little tough in International Falls, Minnesota now, isn't it? We're going to have to learn to be grown-ups about this. And being grown-ups is something that 2020 has taught us that a whole lot of our fellow Americans aren't very good at. No, not at all. But we're just going to have to suck it up. Okay, there's greater detail. Steve in New York lets me know, 7 college football games not going forward, 5 postponed, 2 canceled. So, what more? And I say that because of something that's in my stack of news for the evening. But I'm getting ahead of myself. This program, like all programs on the Horn, is supported by the community. And thus, this program, like every program, begins with gratitude. And so consequently, thanks go out to our subscribers for the 12th day of the month. That means thanks to Gary in New York and to Paul. Thank you to Christopher. Thank you, Christopher, very kindly. That is helpful indeed, as is Jeremy jumping in first past the post on this 12th day of the month. So our fundraising goal is all of $545. $545. And that's a stout sum. That's almost all of yesterday. All but $55 of yesterday and $300 for today. And I recognize that it is difficult, but it's what we're going to have to do to keep this thing going so that maybe we can, if not celebrate the arrival of 2020, note with significant gladness the arrival of 2021, note with significant gladness the passing of 2020, and get through the end of this year. Because I'm being consumed by expenses. Well, there's some happy news, because Chris in Germany has put forward a fuck Donald Trump with a great big rainbow colored poker challenge. And that, if met, that will knock out $200 of the fundraising goal for this evening. It'll take us down to only $345 and mean that we've only got $45 of yesterday to keep up with. Because there are a bunch of creepy bills that are hanging like the sword of Damocles over my head. And it just is what it is. Because it seems like no matter how hard I try, well, let it go. But that's where it is. $545 to go with a $100 challenge, courtesy of Chris in Germany, the fuck Donald Trump with a great big rainbow-colored poker challenge. Because that's what it took for us to get rid of Donald Trump. It took a coalition of people of color, black, brown, and all shades in between. It took a coalition of men and women, women and men. It took a coalition of gay and straight and lesbian and bisexual and transgendered and asexual and intersexual and queer and queer questioning. It took indigenous Americans. It took every kind of American there is to make up the largest single vote total for a presidential candidate in the history of the Republic. And so, indeed, as Chris notes, fuck Donald Trump with a great big rainbow-colored poker. Hear, hear. Hear, hear. And adding to Chris's challenge is Steve in New York. The results of the 2020 presidential election challenge, or the 2020 election challenge, namely 306 electoral votes for Joe Biden plus two senators in Georgia equals 308. And so there's a $30.80 challenge on the table, courtesy of Steve in New York. So that would get us pretty well done with all of yesterday's fundraising, if it is met, if it is met. So hopefully that will start in fairly short order. Thank you. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Steve. Now, let's see. Program note. Obviously, the appointment that I had today was, that's twice now, my oral surgery consult has been bumped out to, what's the date? My oral surgery consult has been bumped out to the 24th of November. So that didn't mess with the schedule today. Of course, yesterday was a terrible day, but I managed to get behind the microphone. Yay. So that's a good thing. I don't see anything in the immediate future that should mess with the broadcast schedule for tomorrow or the rest of or next week, as far as I can tell. So that's a good thing. Okay. Good. What else? Yes, of course. Coming up at the top of the hour of this program, at the beginning of the second hour, we'll have a visit from our good friend Dan Fisher. And Dan Fisher has done something that I think is really, really cool. So we will have an installment of performance art from the Horn Radio Players of the Air. I have the script in hand, and in fact, if this were not a real radio script by a bona fide TV and film professional, I could not do that. It's right here and ready to roll. It will feature Dan and me, and most importantly and delightfully, the lovely and talented Agnes. Cool, huh? Yeah, we'll be sticking around for that, won't we? I'll even give you the title of this entirely original work, which you will not hear anywhere else. It has been, Dan has written it, and we will be the first ever to perform it for a live, not in the studio audience. It's called Best Friend, a one-act play for radio with Coda. So hopefully you'll enjoy that as much as we will, in fact, enjoy performing it. Thank you, Ralps. Ralps has jumped out and met Steve's challenge. And so now that means that Chris's Fuck Donald Trump with a Great Big Rainbow-Colored Poker challenge is on the table to help keep the lupine pest away from the porch. Goody. Where to begin on this thorn in the side Thursday? For yea, verily, there are many thorns. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Charlene has just taken down a quarter of Chris's Fuck Donald Trump with a Great Big Rainbow-Colored Poker Challenge. And so there's $75 remaining on that challenge. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you ever so kindly. Well, let's see. Let's start with some breaking news, shall we? Because, hold on. No, I've got a different place to start. Bob! Last night's show was off the charts from beginning to end, starting with Steve in Georgia calling and talking about his two pages of fears and concerns that he had written down, to Shorty in L.A. sharing the wonderful story of Tuskegee Airmen, and finally that song from the folks down under. Literally had Jeffrey the Giraffe just a-dancing about the place. A definite cowbell for that band. And let me see here. I will remind us all who was responsible for that. That was Bye Bye Donnie. Bye Bye Donnie. And you can find it if you look up Bye Bye Donnie on YouTube. Yes. So, who knows? We may wind up playing that again. It's entirely possible. But definite cowbell for that band, says Joey. However, Giraffrey really liked it when Paula White was doing the strike and strike and strike. Yep, old Giraffrey was just about tapping his paw up and down. What's that, Giraffrey? Giraffrey interjects, "In yesterday's journal, we were not sure exactly where Steve lived in Georgia, but last night we figured it out. Hell, Steve lives at Walgreens. God knows he's always there. However, the idea of Steve writing his fears down on paper is very therapeutic, and that is one reason Joey writes his journal. It's very therapeutic." And a cowbell for Shorty in L.A. for bringing the gentleman to the program last night, Jim, to speak about his father's book detailing the Tuskegee Airmen. On the sadder side of things, since we were discussing World War II on Veterans Day, the Tuskegee Airmen, as well as all the other African Americans who have fought for this country in World War II, were basically denied the benefits of the GI Bill, a clearly racist Jim Crow operation designed, implemented, and fostered by racist bigots like Fred Trump. Yes, Jeffrey, poignantly pronounces, "In fact, the wide disparity of the GI Bill's implementation was instrumental in accelerating the widening gaps in wealth, education, and civil rights between white and black Americans." Yes, Jeffrey is correct. Thanks to people like Fred Trump, blacks and minorities were redlined into poorer neighborhoods and poorer school districts because, as most of us know, a school district's revenue is a direct reflection of the tax value of the homes in those respective neighborhoods. Yes, there's a direct correlation to the values of homes as to the quality of education. That's why I love the movie Stand and Deliver featuring Edward James Olmos. Jeffrey points out that Bob was correct when he corrected Joey, stating that democracy in this country is for some but not all. There's a reason I like that Giraffe so much. That's right, Jeffrey. And some other corrections in the recent journal were as follows. Bob pronounced hollaback correctly, as is not hollerback. However you want to say it, these women again voted for Trump because they thought the economy was good when it actually wasn't. These women did not care that he cheated on his wives, cheated thousands of contractors out of millions of dollars, and cheated on his taxes because they thought the economy was all that mattered. The hollabacks did not care if he stole babies from their mother's arms or stole the lives of a mother load of people, nearly a quarter million now dead due to the virus. These dumb hollaback bitches only cared about the money in the end of the economy. Kind of reminds us of Germany back during the World War II days when Hitler had millions murdered and all the people cared about was that the trains were running on time. Actually, historically speaking, he made the trains run on time was, I believe, first said about Benito Mussolini. And Jeffrey adds, yes, the people were well-trained and brainwashed. Grim little cowbell for well-trained. Bob also mentioned that there are as many as 24 women that currently have credible allegations of rape against Trump, and not just one, E. Jean Carroll. We can only hope that some of these other women have some DNA to share with the district attorney in the Southern District of New York or the State District of Manhattan, as Donald J. Trump stands trial on tax fraud and evasion. By the way, the J stands for jury. That's a definite cowbell. This has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 12th day of November 2020, with Giraffery looping the awesome Aussies singing So Long to Trump. P.S. By the way, if you want to hear that awesome Aussie singing that song, go to headon.live and consider contributing, and then scroll down to one of the podcasts to pick up the program, or just listen live, 5 to 8 Eastern, 2 to 5 Pacific. Correct. And that would be, if you want to hear it again, it's toward the end of the program for the 11th day of November, 2020. Thank you, Joey. Thank you very kindly. And as for looping things, Darlene in Connecticut says, rock that extended drum loop. I could listen to it all day, especially as it's from big country. How's that subdued Donald Trump? It hadn't lasted that long, but I basked in it. Oh, yes, there's been some basking. Because, well, Donald Trump is a sorry bastard. Oh, hell, I'm going to go ahead and give myself a small cowbell for that miserable pun. Yeah. Sorry, bastard. Yeah. But there is breaking news. Larry in Liberalville says, they claim Corey Lewandowski has COVID-19, but I think he has whooping cough, as in ass whooping. He just doesn't want to admit his man lost. Whooping cough. Man, the cowbells are coming fast and furious now, aren't they? Also, I was looking at voting figures for president to date. If you give Georgia to Biden, then the states he won yield a nearly 15 million plurality over the states that Trump won. Another interesting number is that Trump got more votes in the states he lost than in those he won. How about that? That's interesting. I hadn't pondered that one. And that may take a little while this evening after the program's over. He got more votes in the states he lost than in those he won. Oh, he is a loser of epic proportions, isn't he? The Electoral College is weighted toward small states because of the two-senator rule. In states where the winning candidate got less than a million votes, Trump beat Biden by 59 to 36 electoral votes, respectively. Just a little bit of food for thought. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Talking of, and you know, when it comes to, you know, ugly, bitter truths, well, enter Turd Blossom. You remember Turd Blossom? That was Raisin Brain, George W. Bush's, that's Malloy's name for him, nickname for Karl Rove, his evil mastermind. And in point of fact, well, even Karl Rove has decided to weigh in on the situation. In an op-ed at the Wall Street Journal published yesterday, Turd Blossom said Joe Biden will become president whether Trump's allies like it or not. He said, well, no, 2020 was not the across-the-board blue tsunami that too many pundits predicted. But there's no getting around the fact that there was one major Democratic victory, and that is the fact that Joe Biden won. And it was sort of a case of fainting with damn praise, as Karl Rove went on to point out how much Democrats didn't perform up to expectations, but it does not change the fact that Joe Biden is going to be president on the 20th day of January, 2021. He wrote, pundits predicted a blue tsunami of historic proportions that would carry Democrats into the White House, flip the U.S. Senate, increase Speaker Nancy Pelosi's caucus by as many as 20 seats, and transform a basket full of red state legislatures into blue ones just in time for redistricting in 2021. Well, the White House changed hands, but none of the rest happened. Still, enough voters wanted change. Mr. Trump is now pursuing legal challenges in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, and Nevada. And there will be an automatic recount in Georgia given Mr. Biden's 0.29-point lead there. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is correct that Mr. Trump is 100% within his rights to go to court over concerns about fraud and transparency. But the president's efforts are unlikely to move a single state from Mr. Biden's column, and certainly they're not enough to change the final outcome. And that's the bottom line. Yeah. Well, this goes back to a long, long time ago when a friend of mine who was practicing law at the time got a call from a fella at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he answered, "Hello." And the fella said, "I just found out I've been sued for $1 million. And my friend at the time said he told his client, "Well, do you have $1 million? To which the client responded at 3 o'clock in the morning, "Well, no." And my buddy responded, "Then go to bed, because that's what I'm doing." Anybody with a typewriter, this is before computers were quite ubiquitous, anybody with a typewriter and the filing fee can sue you for anything they want to. Go to bed. And by the way, I'm billing you for this. 3 o'clock in the morning. And it's absolutely true. Nitwit Nero, as long as he's got the filing fee, can sue for pretty much anything he wants to. That does suing, however, does not equate to winning or even being remotely right. And so that line in Turd Blossom's op-ed is a little bit disingenuous. Trump is now pursuing legal challenges in Pitt. No, he's pursuing challenges. Whether they are legal or not remains to be seen. And more importantly, whether they are meritorious as opposed to meretricious or not remains to be seen. And the smart money is on not meritorious. So I would just urge us all to bear that in mind. Yeah. And of course, yes, Corey Lewandowski is the latest to apparently come down with the Rona, if not a case of the galloping fantods. Yeah. And thank you very kindly to, Lou. Don't forget the January 5th reminder. Thank you, Lou. January 5th, the special runoff election in Georgia for two Senate seats on which the future of America hinges and control of the Senate as well. Wherever you are, do what you can. If you're in Georgia, work in Georgia. If you're not in Georgia, reach out. Maybe offer to mail postcards. Do whatever you can. Phone bank, whatever you can. All right. January 5th, November the 18th. And remember, if you're in Georgia, you can request an absentee ballot from the Georgia Secretary of State, and you can request it online. And the ballots cannot be sent out any earlier than November 18th. But let's get this started early. Okay. Matt writes in from San Francisco. A rainbow poker? Well, put me down for $20. I don't want my gay card revoked. Matt, the official LGBTQQIA den mother of the horn, I don't think your gay card is in any danger whatsoever. But yes, thank you very kindly. So that takes us down to. Let's see. That takes us down to $55. Thank you very kindly. And I just had news, good news. Yuki has jumped in behind Chris, echoing the fuck Donald Trump with a great big rainbow-colored poker challenge. And we can take a big bite out of the overage. It's another $100 challenge. So there's $55 remaining of Chris's. And after that, another $100 challenge. So it's a big night for matching your money. If we can raise $155, That'll make a total of, let's see, 460 out of 540 we needed to raise. So that's huge. Thank you, Yuki. And thank you, Chris. So there's $155 remaining. That's 10 at 1550 or 15 at, I don't know, is there change involved in it? Whatever. Thank you, Yuki. Thank you, Chris. And thank you, everyone responding so far. Jude with a note says, Joey and Jeffrey, hearing his thoughts are like sitting down in an overstuffed comfy armchair, cozy, while enjoying a mug of River Moon coffee, breathing with ease. And yes, River Moon coffee is indeed a fine cup of Joe. E. And Jeffrey. Ooh. I'm really banging on all eight cylinders this evening. Right? Yeah. Then again, Lee in New York, right there. Subject line, cowbells. Stop telling us how quickly the cowbells are coming, Bob. I know. That doesn't get a cowbell, damn it. Oh, I'm being cranky now, huh? And I got a note from Dave number 11 just shortly before airtime. I think that there is an explosion of creativity taking place in the program. So, says Dave number 11, my state senator reposts George W. Bush's public congratulations to Biden-Harris for their win on his Facebook page. Then this maggot named Dahl, that's how we pronounce it down here at least, Dahl, it might be pronounced Doyle elsewhere, but around here it's Dahl, just barely an entire syllable, Dahl, kind of like that stuff you lubricate your car with, all. It's hardly even a word. It's more like a minor grunt, Dahl. Anyway, Dahl starts in a maggotin' about the fake election. Let's join the action in progress where Dahl is complaining about the fake election. Dahl says, no, we don't. That is, congratulate Joe Biden, Kamala Harris. Too many inconsistencies and too much evidence to the contrary to describe as faith. We need these illegal ballots investigated and litigated before such statement can be made. Enough where they have to be investigated so they can be prevented in future elections. 4 years ago, Dems were screaming Russian collusion on social media skewed the election. This year has showed the power of censorship in the hands of social media. It has shown the power that, I'm sorry, I'm doing this in a hillbilly accent or southern accent. This may be entirely inapplicable, but, you know, maggot's going to maggot. So my apologies if I'm getting this wrong, Dave. It has shown the power that the news media holds with their own plug or play form of censorship. The election itself has shown blatant disregard for the rule of law in many instances in the states of Michigan, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Arizona, and very likely others. The blatant disregard for state and federal law in the state of Pennsylvania resembles that of Mr. Trump. So no, Mr. Bush and Congressman McGuire, it isn't a win for democracy, but quite the contrary. Regardless of who wins or loses, these things need attention, investigation, and remediation if we are going to ensure free and honesty in our future elections. The democracy of our republic and freedom itself depends on it. Well, at least he said republic and not our democracy. A reader named Jessica uses a laughing emoji. Jessica Ann Cooper, there's nothing funny about it. We need to return to honesty and integrity in media. We need the same traits in our elections. A person named Rick responds, I'm absolutely sure you know more on these matters than Bush. In all your words, you fail to provide one specific. Much about nothing. Doyle responds, no, Bush is ignoring it. Noel sets his beer down and responds, there's no way they'd rig it so Trump would lose but McConnell would stay in office, or Lindsey Graham for that matter. And if I could have rigged an election, I would have tossed Kevin McCarthy and Devin Nunes out on their asses as well. There's no inconsistencies. In fact, the votes were very consistent. Trump kept saying how voting by mail would go wrong, so a lot of Republicans didn't vote by mail but rather in person. Democrats, on the other hand, voted heavily by mail, which is why it took so long to count their votes. Doyle responds, Noel Vos, you will find out when it goes to court. They even know how it were done. Noel still has his beer sitting down. You will find out that no matter what challenges are made to the court, Biden will still be president-elect. Really. Prepare yourself for that. I'm not trying to be cruel. There's just no evidence of any sort of large-scale fraud that would change the results. If there's a recount in any state, it's highly unlikely to change the tally in any meaningful way. Doyle, however, will not give up. It's not about who the president is. It's about a lawful, secure election. You better grab some popcorn because the real show begins tomorrow. Noel, who has not yet learned never to wrestle with a pig in shit because you both get covered in it and the pig enjoys it, responds, sighs. There's no evidence of fraud. The only show that will happen is Trump's ongoing alternate reality show, which America has had to endure for 4 years. Doyle, however, quick on the uptake, says, no profile. What country are you from? Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Noel responds, Doyle Miller, I have a profile. It's private. Only friends can see it. I don't want stalkers and trolls harassing me. I'm talking to you on Mike McGuire's post. Why would I be on it if I wasn't one of his constituents? Shakes head. Oh, Doyle. Because I come across fakes all the time. Noel, get off the mainstream news and you will see a hell of a lot of voter fraud not mentioned by the media, including some evidence of the computer programs in use in Michigan and Pennsylvania, Arizona, to change votes. Oh, dear God. I saw that earlier today, that allegation. That's what is going to court today. They got too greedy in their efforts and created impossible anomalies. That's why FBI and feds are in Pennsylvania. Well, Noel is a patient soul and an informed one. Okay, Doyle, first of all, news is mainstream unless it's tabloid or conspiracy garbage. Some of those news sources may be questionable when it comes to bias or bending the truth, but it's still mainstream news. So if you're either getting some version of the news or getting nonsense, opinions based on hearsay and rumors aren't news. The illogical theories people come up with that have no basis in fact aren't news, because that's not real information. It's only informative on the level that we should be concerned that there's people gullible enough to believe that kind of crap. The media didn't count the votes. The states did. The Republicans are entitled to ask for recounts. That's fair. Sometimes there are small errors, and when the election is close, I understand why someone would demand that. That's part of how our system works. That's fair. If they want recounts and the laws of the states allow for it, fine. However, recounts really make a difference in the outcome unless the number is incredibly close. When the difference in candidates is by tens or hundreds of thousands, they just don't make those kinds of errors, unless they're Florida, I guess, but I have to tell people not to fire guns at hurricanes in Florida, so Florida's just, well, Florida. Insisting that there was fraud in our election where there's no evidence because the candidate believes he should have won and so do his supporters, that questions how our very system works. The evidence you speak of doesn't exist. Those are rumors spread to dispel confidence in the results. That's the road Trump and his supporters are taking, and that will be his legacy as well as the other Republicans who don't refute his claims. He and his supporters chose to further divide this country based on his narcissistic need to win. I fear that Noel lost to Doyle way earlier with words like narcissistic in there. Rather than lose gracefully. If you want to walk that road with him, that's your choice. But you need to understand you're supporting a person who only cares about himself and not the damage he has done to our system and continues to do. This fight is about Trump needing to win no matter what. His inability to be a decent human being, and the fact that he truly doesn't care about a country he's supposed to serve. He's never cared about being president and the work involved. He only cares about the attention he gets and the perks. That's why he's been holding rallies and basically running for re-election since he got in office. He wants to be fawned over by people like you. Are you fine with a man who doesn't want to be president of the U.S., let alone president of the majority? He lost the popular vote in his first election. He won the Electoral College, but he did not have the vote of the people. He lost the popular vote even before the electoral votes had come in from the states in this election. You're talking about fraud and inconsistencies because you think he should win the vote on a technicality, the Electoral College system, rather than the majority vote. Maybe it's time to realize that the majority would like a president that they voted for. This is supposed to be democracy. There's something wrong with the system when someone can lose the majority vote and still become president. That makes people question the system. That makes people not want to vote when they think their votes don't matter. To say those votes are fraudulent as well, when there's nothing that backs that up, that says again that those votes don't matter. That's not right. Doyle is tenacious, if nothing else. Please try to explain national average turnout for 2020 was 66%. How come contested states are around 89%? Impossible. Noel ain't got no quit. If one state had extremely high turnout in any of those contested states, it will make it look like it goes against the national average. Statistics can be easily manipulated like that. You can't compare the data of, say, four states compared to 50. It's too easy to make things look off. You need to look at the percentage of every state in the country and see how the turnout was to understand averages. It's also important to take into context that the contested states might have higher voter turnouts because both parties knew those states could turn the election. Often in swing states, parties work harder to get people to vote. States that are a given for one party or another, while they want people to vote, it's simply not worth the time and money to put the get-out-the-vote effort, at least when it comes to the presidency. For example, there was very little presidential campaigning in California because California has become reliably Democratic when it comes to presidential voting in recent elections. But there was a ton of campaigning by both Biden and Trump in Pennsylvania, especially as Election Day came closer because Pennsylvania was a toss-up state. And as an epilogue to all of this, Marvin Martian.
I see you were finished with the Elodium Q36 exploding space modulator. Can I have it back now?
And all of this makes eminently good sense to those of us who are willing to use our big primate brains to sort things out. But if you're operating on little more than your reptilian amygdala, it's an entirely different story. Okay, well, thank you. Thank you. Jude has awarded me a cowbell for Cup of Joey. I thought that was kind of clever. Thank you, Jude. And Steve in New York reminds us, we reached a milestone today, 2,117 deaths today, the first time we've reached 2,000 plus since June 26th. Sadly, as we proceed nearer and nearer the really vicious part of winter. Because remember, we've got... little more than 5 weeks of autumn left. We will see even grimmer days. And one of the realities I think we need to come to terms with is the fact that part of the reason Nitwit Nero is not doing anything is because he wants to get COVID as far out of hand as he possibly can, so that he can hand as big a mess as he possibly can to Joe Biden. Because even Donald Trump knows he's not going to be president anymore after January 20th, 2021. 12-0-0-0-1. And it's all over for Donald Trump. On the other hand, we have a lot of problems to sort out in this country. While the folks over at Twitter have announced that COVID Caligula will once again be subject to the terms of use and terms of service at Twitter, it's almost a polar opposite at Facebook. According to Reuters, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg said, "We have specific rules around how many times you need to violate certain policies before we will deactivate your account completely." Speaking of Steve Bannon, he said, While the offenses here, I think, came close to crossing that line, they clearly did not cross that line. And what he was talking about was Steve Bannon calling for the director of the FBI and Anthony Fauci to be beheaded. Really? Now, when that video went out, Facebook did take it down, the video itself, and they removed a few Bannon pages that were actively spreading bullshit about the election, but they let Bannon stay on Facebook qua Bannon. So if calling for the beheading of two public figures isn't enough to get you bounced from Facebook, one wonders what in the mechanically fabricated mind of Mark Zuckerberg is. So, there's that. Suman, with a note, says, I know pollsters don't have a good reputation at this time. This email is not a defense, but perhaps an explanation. If you look at the states and the presidential polls, then add up the remaining votes and split the difference according to the current counted vote split, the polls are actually remarkably accurate, with three exceptions, Florida, Ohio, and Wisconsin. While the talking heads are all wondering why, oh, why the polls were so wrong, I think there's a simple explanation. These maggots in these maggot-infested states lied to the pollsters. For future reference, I think a simple weighted average of the percentage of people who actually voted for Trump across the counties in these states can be used to adjust future polls in these states. Remember, all models, and Suman is a data guy, remember, all models are wrong. Some are useful. That's why, you know, that's why they're models. They're not reflections of absolute reality. makes sense. And in fact, I have no problem crediting the background theory that Suman is talking about, that maggots deliberately lied to pollsters, because that's the kind of thing that they talk about in private Facebook groups. You know, private Facebook groups devoted to, say, QAnon. Because again, if we recall, it was in a private QAnon Facebook group that they hatched the plan to attack the Biden campaign bus in Texas. And of course, it's over on Facebook that they're hatching this cockamamie plan to shut the country down by maggot truckers refusing to drive their trucks and do their jobs. Because that's a real thing that's happening. I had a note from our buddy Arnold last night saying, I got to find it here. There's a table at the local gas station here with information about the trucker strike. You know, these clowns masturbating in the face of their own self-interest. And, okay, cowbell for that image. For fuck's sake, says Megan, when the goddamned intelligence community sounded the alarm bells 4 years ago about Russian interference in our election, these right-wing nut jobs didn't want to hear about it. Then during the impeachment hearings, I had to hear the likes of Senator Lady G, Jim Shorts Jordan, and others bleating on about Democrats trying to overturn the results of an election. Now that their orange shit stain inside a flaming dumpster fire savior has been kicked the hell out of the White House, I now have to listen to these folks suddenly worry about election tampering and fraud. Yeah. Well, if you weren't worried about it 4 years ago, they can jolly well shut the hell up about it now. The intelligence community did their job despite that asshole current president dumping on them for 4 years straight. They don't even have enough sense to realize that that man is trying to kill them. He doesn't give a fuck about them or the rest of us, while I have to read yet one more AP story about how Trumpers have such a hard time accepting the results of the election. Oh, I know. And they really and genuinely and for truly are pretty much out of control. Sumon sent me video earlier from Arizona, Maricopa County Sheriff's Office deputies, only a few feet away from a gang of maggots assaulting a Telemundo news crew, simply trying to do their job reporting. And they had a security guard with them, but, you know, he was one and they were many. And so this is what transpired.
Biden is a rapist. He raped his daughter. Take your hand off me. Biden is a rapist. He raped his daughter. Biden is a rapist. He raped his daughter.
Now, we've been talking about loops this evening. That's not a loop. That is this big old ignorant maggot constantly repeating something that even the stupid maggots won't say. Biden is a rapist. He raped his daughter. And he is trying to keep a journalist, you know, the only profession that's actually mentioned in the Constitution of the United States, from doing his job.
Biden's daughter wrote a diary about being raped by him. Put your fucking hand on me, bitch!
Yeah, that, because the security staffer got in between the maggot and the reporter. This is who they are. This guy's not a one-off. This guy is not a minority of Trump supporters. This guy is the mainstream of Trump supporters. I mean, hear the toxic masculinity, the poisonousness in his voice. To the extent that he is assaulting anyone, people have a right to put their hand on him. I mean, I'm kind of a mean person, but I think people have the right to pistol whip him. But that's me, and again, I'm mean. In a case like that where the guy's in your face, you have the absolute right to use as much force as necessary to end his criminal conduct. And in Arizona, that might very well include, not that I'm in support of it, gunplay. But this is happening all over the country. They're out of their itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, tiny little minds. Matt in San Francisco, subject line, the goddess. So the candidate that said he would date his daughter on TV is upstanding and Biden raped his daughter? Oh, how much twisting in one's mind must one do to get there? Ah, flaw in your reasoning, Matt. You use the word mind. How much twisting must one do in one's pathetic lizard brain to get there? Ah, see, now there's a difference. Yes, indeed. And Steve in New York says, wait, tell me again, who are the snowflakes? I think that question is fairly well answered. And something we will probably go into later after... Or maybe during, after our radio play here shortly, we will delve further into the mind, if we dare call it that, of my governor, Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice, who has, in fact, declared, no, really, yeah. Oh, Agnes. Oh, sick burn for Agnes. Said, I'm just wondering who found Iwanka's diary. Because what it, remember, whatever the maggots complain about, Donald Trump has done at some point in time. Fact. I'm beginning to wonder if slander and libel laws when it comes to public figures need a major overhaul, says Darlene in Connecticut. I'm getting tired of this shit. People can just throw out any BS or projections because he's projecting onto Biden Trump's implicitly incestuous relationship with Ivanka, my daddy Trump Kushner. So without even communicating with each other, Agnes and Darlene are on the same wavelength. It happens all the time here. It's just kind of the magic of the community. Let's see. I'm looking for. Oh, just a second. Well, the bottom line is, Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice has declared that he simply cannot accept the idea that Joe Biden is going to win this election, or actually, oh, not going to win, has won. He is a miserably ignorant bigot. Now, this is the guy who used to tell his Kunta Kinte story. No, really. Because that actually happened. And it goes on and on and on. Mercy. But more importantly than his ignorant refusal to cope with reality, it's his inability to cope with the coronavirus that's proving so damn deadly. And after our little piece of radio theater here in a few minutes, I think I'll invite Dan's commentary on that because, Dan is a born and raised West Virginian. Just because he no longer lives here does not mean he is not entitled to an opinion on this sad and often benighted state. It has been said of West Virginia that if you were to make a symphony of West Virginia, it would have to be written in a minor key. What the fuck, says Ralphs? Jim Justice? Yeah, I know. Flavio says, extra cowbell for Agnes, ROTFLMAO, over the diary quip. Well, that's Agnes and Darlene, Flavio. Because they did it at almost identical moments in time. Brendan, with a note, subject line, pistol whip. You could use a pistol to whip that maggot, but I would prefer a baseball bat. You can't beat the stupid out of someone that profoundly stupid, so you might as well enjoy beating the fucker. I understand, Brendan. I understand. Yep. Oh, by the way, I should mention this. We have a scumbag emailer. And the scumbag emailer is there just about every evening. And I want you to know that he's trying to, this scumbag is trying to imitate you. The little dirtbag is absolutely crazed for attention on this program. And so consequently, floods the program with emails that get caught by the system. But every now and then I get a heads up about what this little shitbird sends, and it's nasty and it's hateful and it's vile and it's vulgar. He likes to use hate-filled epithets of an ethnic nature, a racial nature, references to human sexuality and gender. And like I said, the system catches him and bounces him. But I get a note every now and then from Brother Deacon Asa saying, you know, look what this little fuckwit's doing. And of course, I never read them to you because the shitbird craves that attention. Sometimes he pretends to be a lefty progressive, and other times he crafts these vulgar, filthy emails. But you should know that he is, because he hears your names. He hears the names of the people who participate in the conversation. He hears the names of the people who participate in the conversation. And so he tries to mimic them. It's truly pathetic. And one hopes at some point in time that this pathetic thing, the best part of whom ran down his mama's leg, one hopes that he will experience an early transmission failure in heavy rush hour traffic going about 90 miles an hour in the middle of a freeway somewhere. Because I don't like maggots. And I especially don't like the ones who try to perpetrate fraud upon our community. Just saying. But if you heard the sound effect there, you know that our buddy Dan Fisher is on the line. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Bob.
How are you? I am well, you wordsmith, you.
Well, more of a typist, actually. Wasn't that with Jack Kerouac? No, it was said of Jack Kerouac.
Yeah, that was Truman Capote critiquing On the Road.
That's right. This isn't writing, it's typing.
Yeah, it's not writing, it's typing.
And I'd like Paul Lynde to block, please.
How are you?
Well, Bob, I've been good. I've been, I've been listening to your program and the past couple of days, and I'd say, you know, I've learned a lot of stuff because, boy, are you well informed. I don't know how many hours a day you spend going up and down the mainstream media to try to get all that information called
all of them, Dan. Yeah, I do show prep even when I'm dreaming.
Well, it's obvious you do the deep research and the results speak for themselves. But you know, with all of that news, all of that information, it just sort of keeps pulling at the nerve endings, doesn't it? It just makes one more anxious. It does,
but you know, I was thinking about something earlier today. Yeah, thinking about things. That's another one of those things I do all the time. But I am looking forward because Joe Biden is going to be the president of the United States on January 20th, 2021. And Kamala Harris is going to be the vice president of the United States on January 20th, 2021.
You see, that's according to the Constitution. Yes.
Yes. That little pamphlet where double S's look like double F's, and
that's right.
And like in the Declaration Congress. Of Independence, where it says "In Congress."
In Congress.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I know that. Yes.
Precisely. I am looking forward to the day when I get to do 3 hours of radio because. This used to happen all the time before 2016. I'm looking forward to the day, Dan, when I get to do 3 hours of radio and never, not once, no how, no way, mention the name Oh, Donald Trump.
He who shall not be named, he shall be our Voldemort of our generation.
You know, I hate to disagree, and I'm not disagreeing just to be disagreeable, Dan, but he's too fat, ugly, stupid, ignorant, and generally shitty to qualify as a Voldemort.
This is true. He's not nearly as cunning, you know.
No.
I think, you know, if you're to compare Trump, you know, I've compared him in the past to Charles Foster Kane. I do think, though, if you're going for more immediate popular culture, I think you could compare Donald Trump to King Joffrey of Game of Thrones. I think that's a very apt and fitting comparison. Because he's a child. He's a little child who's like, I won't leave the throne. I won't. You can't make me. It's like arguing with a kid who's it's bath time. It's
okay. I will hold my breath until I'm no longer orange.
It still sounds like.
I know yes.
It's my impression of another impression doing Ed Sullivan.
Exactly.
It's better than me. Thou art a better Trump than I, Robert.
More fainting with damn praise. Pardon any extraneous noises here. I'm getting Agnes's headphones hooked up, so bear with me for just a moment.
Well, I'll vamp. Well, we're the boys of the chorus. I don't know how much you you prepped our listeners, because I missed the first 15 minutes or so tonight. I did join in mid classic Bob. I won't call it rant, but whatever it is. But I missed the first 15 minutes. I don't know how much setup you've done. I'm happy and willing to do setup on this little radio play that I fashioned together over the past couple of days.
Well, I mentioned it at the top of the program, and but I did not. I mentioned the name of the piece,
right? Which folks, you got to understand. I've loaded up poor Bob's email account with about six different rewrites of this damn thing, and most of the words, you know, or many of the words aren't even really mine. They were from somebody else, which we'll get into. But by God, I kept switching so many things around and many different drafts. To get it just right and just for you. This is a first, right? Right, Bob? You've never done live radio theater on the horn before, if I'm not mistaken.
We've never done it that was an original composition.
Oh, okay. Okay. This was just for the show that I created. It's sort of like our version of the Mercury Theater. If it's a success tonight, maybe we'll do future versions. And Bob will.
Oh, I think this could be great fun. You know, when the shutdown first came, Dan, I played with the idea of trying to pull together a cast of way too many to do a pre-recorded version of Hamlet. And I started off down that road and realized real quick that was not going to happen.
Uh huh.
Because what I'd pondered was that we would get various people to read the roles. And then they would send me snippets, and I would paste them together inside an audio editor. And and that just no. And to do that live, you really do get a sense of profound respect for somebody like Orson Welles doing, say, The War of the Worlds, or any radio theater. It is not easy. And there's a possibility that just in these few pages. That I will probably screw up.
But... Oh, you and me both. And I wrote it, but I'm sure I'm going to screw up. I even spent a little time while I was listening to you going through this with a pen and just sort of marking words that I might stumble over and things like that. But I'm going to screw up. We're human.
Well, I want you to know that Agnes is standing here next to me making funny faces at me.
Because I'm right there. New day, right?
Agnes, it is you that I must thank, too, because... you know, I don't know if you're as keen to be on the microphone as the guy next to you, but if you're not in particular, if that's not really your style, I don't know. I appreciate you sacrificing a little bit of your modesty.
No, Dan, I'm not a mic person at all, but I love you, so I will do this.
Well, I love you, too. And listen to that voice. You have a great voice.
Yes, I tell her. I keep telling her. Every time the Horn Family Community Congregation even hears her voice, I am inundated with emails saying, hello to the lovely Lady Agnes. We love the Viking warrior Pharaoh princess, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But do us a favor. And first, I did mention that the name of the radio play is Best Friend, a one-act play for radio with Coda. But I didn't give any of the details.
I don't want to give away too many. I think we can discuss it maybe afterward. I mean, really what it I don't want to explain the moral of the story or the themes of what's going on when I think it will be evident afterwards. And listen, after we do the show, if you're willing, I think that it would be good to open up either the lines or at least the emails to get people's response.
Oh, absolutely.
Not whether or not they like it or, you know, but how they may or may not relate to
right. Did it make an impression? Have you experienced something like this?
Exactly.
I hate to use the word trigger, but does it call to mind any parallel references or have you experienced anything like it?
Yeah.
And so just so folks will know, the role of the narrator will be played by Agnes Kincaid.
I'm bowing. So.
The role of Dan, and this, y'all should know, this took some doing. The role of Dan will be played by Dan.
Originally, I wanted to play the other part, but Bob convinced me it might be a little too confusing. And he's probably right, because Bob's right about a lot of things.
Or less. But anyway. And me, Bob, will be playing Joe.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yep, right. Yeah. Very tiny golf clap. Yes.
Listen, I actually found a little Salvation Army bell down in my garage this weekend. I thought about bringing it up here, but that's patented trademark material, I think. I can't take your intellectual property of a cowbell. So,
okay. So let's see. I'm going to ask you to do me one favor because I just realized I screwed up monumentally already, but it does not affect the performance of the play.
Very good.
But what I need you to do, please, I'm going to disconnect with you.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you to, I'm going to hang up with you and you just turn around and call right back. And okay. Because I've got to get you. The bottom line is I got to get you on a different channel.
Got it. And folks, we will be right back. We've done enough foreplay here. I think it's time for the verbal intercourse. So give us a minute or so, and I'll be right back.
Here, here. Stand by. If we had some pre-show music, I'd be playing that right now. Okay. And there we go. Let me make sure everything works. Do we have you, Dan?
Yeah, I'm now on. What channel am I on? Am I on the shopping channel, the history channel?
You're on the channel. No,
English?
You're on the iPad channel is what you're on, if you want to know the truth.
Okay.
And so we can now attempt to get this going without further ado.
Leon.
The Horn Radio Theater Players of the Air present Best Friend, a one-act play for radio with Coda.
Their friendship began in Middleburn, West Virginia. Dan and Joe played trumpet together in the junior high school marching band. Joe was always a bit shy. not as vocal or as demonstrative as his friend, but they often laughed a lot at the same things. They sat together on the high school band bus, to away football games, played ping pong in Dan's basement, and got drunk on cheap beer and wine while driving around country back roads. After graduation, they both attended West Virginia University. Just stop me anywhere there, Dan.
No, please, you're doing great.
But their majors and personal interests kept them in separate social circles, and perhaps, inevitably, they drifted apart. After college, Dan moved to New York, while Joe stayed in West Virginia. But they kept in touch. Dan served as best man at Joe's first wedding, and Joe was present for the funeral when Dan's father died. And through the years, thanks to Facebook, Dan and Joe were able to stay up to date with each other's families, career paths, and mutual health issues. While both were in their mid-50s, Joe had suffered a mild heart attack, and then Dan underwent a heart transplant. They both fully recovered and now lead healthy, productive lives. We now jump ahead to the present time, more or less. It's Wednesday, November 4th, the day of the 2020 presidential elections. After going to bed agitated, concerned over Donald Trump's possible re-election, Dan woke up the next morning to learn that Joe Biden now had lead in electoral votes, though not with the necessary 270, with many state races still too close to call as mail-in votes continue to be counted. Dan spends much of his day, like many Americans, online, constantly scanning the numbers and refreshing for updates. By 4:49 p.m., he's jubilant to learn that Joe Biden is projected to have won the state of Wisconsin and Michigan, which puts the Biden campaign within 17 electoral votes of the presidency.
You're doing great, Agnes. You're almost there.
Thank you, Dan. Donald Trump is on the verge of defeat. Dan shares this news with his friends on Facebook. It's not over. Pennsylvania and Georgia are still counting mail-in votes, but the momentum is definitely in Biden's favor. To the great relief of many, but not all Americans, Dan's old best friend Joe is one of those who's not happy with the developments.
Dan, enjoy your victory, because we all know that Mr. Biden's unfit to run this country, which leaves Kamala, who has no experience at all. I predict many of you who voted for this pair will be very sorry you did in future, in the coming years.
Joe, we are old friends. I believed 4 years ago that a reality TV show host with no political experience whatsoever was unfit to be president, and I believe that time has proven me correct, and the majority of American voters have indicated that they agree. That's all I'm going to say to you in my reply to you, and I hope that you show enough respect for me that you leave it at that.
A number of Dan's friends then chime in generally to concur with Dan's opinions on the fitness of Joe Biden to serve as president, also pointing out that Donald Trump's lack of prior experience and what they see as his subsequent lack of leadership. In reply to those friends' comments, Dan posts a photograph of the 77-year-old Joe Biden riding a bicycle.
Dan, I can run a half marathon, but that doesn't qualify me to be president of the U.S.,
No, but you seem to be making the assertion that Biden is already at death's door. That's what I was addressing. If it's anybody who might not survive 4 more years, it's the obese guy who won't walk 20 steps without a golf cart and still refuses to wear a mask, even after having tested positive for COVID-19.
Think what you like, but President Trump's past many years of negotiation and business skills gave him the experience he needed to achieve the results as president. For instance, we're now an oil-independent country under his leadership. Pretty good for a reality TV show star, wouldn't you say?
To be fair, to be fair to Joe, the United States is not yet oil independent, but it's close. In 2016, while Barack Obama was still president, the U.S. was between 86 and 91% self-sufficient. In regards to crude oil consumption, by 2019, the United States had become a net exporter of all oil products, including both refined petroleum products and crude oil. As of today, we import about 9.94 million barrels of petroleum products per year, mostly from Canada, Mexico, and Saudi Arabia.
Joe, Donald Trump declared bankruptcy six times prior to becoming president, and from all reports, he may have to again, as he has over $300 million in personal debt coming due in 2022. And his daddy, Fred Trump, had given his boy another $500 million throughout his lifetime in tax-deferred custodial accounts, trust funds, gifts, and loans. If my dad had been able to give me that kind of dough, I'd look pretty successful too. And look, I've lived in the New York City area since 1986. Even back then, long before he ever decided to enter the world of politics, we all knew about Donald Trump and his history of scams and self-promotion. He managed to create a character on television that you and millions of other people believed to be the real thing, and damned if you didn't decide to vote for that character. But like a lot of stuff on TV, Joe, it's not real. Hell, the boardroom on The Apprentice was a built set. I have friends who worked on that show. I always find it kind of a mystery why so many working class types, like the folks we grew up with, feel a kinship with Donald Trump. The man has never worked a real job for a day in his life. He has never had a friend in this world who wasn't wealthy or didn't come from money. I seriously doubt that he's ever set foot in a grocery store, and I'm sure he has no idea what a gallon of milk costs. He has a long, well-established history of stiffing the contractors he hired to put up buildings with his name on them. Again, we knew this. We knew this back in the 1980s. That's a lot of workers who didn't get their paychecks that they were expecting. And the MAGA Love Me rallies have been racking up unpaid bills in their wake. To the cities who put cops on OT to cover those events, and to the spaces that hosted them. He also crossed the picket line when the workers of The Apprentice went on strike to be recognized as members of my union, IATSE Local 52. And throughout his presidential term, Trump and his Department of Labor have been knocking out the pins on laws to protect workers, both union and non-union. As we speak, he and the Republican members of Congress are still trying to get a national right-to-work law implemented. And enough with the Joe Biden is senile or is going to die soon nonsense. Donald Trump has, in less than 4 years, become even more incoherent in his thoughts and words. Within a single sentence, Joe, he'll fly through three or four unconnected ideas, skipping over nouns and verbs, repetitively using such favorite words and phrases like lovely and like nobody's ever seen, not to mention a flagrant inability to tell the truth, with an over-reliance on people are saying to promote such nonsense as windmills causing cancer or that he knows more than doctors, which judging by his incessant tweets throughout what is supposed to be a work day, come primarily from Fox or AONN, he has become President Crazy Grandpa.
Dan, President Trump has worked as president for the past 4 years for free, donating his salary to charity, not to mention using much of his own wealth to pay for his campaign, unlike his Democrat counterparts who've wealthy donors to back them and then use them as puppets to run their own personal agenda if they're elected, hence the swamp.
Joe, how do we even know if he's worked for free and donated his pay to charity? Because he says so? If he released his tax returns like every president of the past 50 years has done, we could see if that claim is true, among other things, but he hasn't. And it's not because he's being audited. The IRS has gone on record saying that they are not preventing Trump from releasing his taxes. Nixon released his tax returns while he was being audited by the IRS.
That's true. 1973. Look it up.
Every weekend, Trump and his staff fly down to Mar-a-Lago, a property that he owns, all personnel, including Secret Service, pay full price to stay there, plus food and drinks. That is money in Trump's pocket right there. And it would not be unreasonable to assume that those profits exceed a president's annual salary of $400,000.
Dan pulled this number out of his ass, but he was arguably not incorrect. Mar-a-Lago charges a guest up to $650 per night, and by all evidence, the Secret Service doesn't receive any sort of discount. The Washington Post estimates that Trump Organization pocketed at least $1.2 million in revenue from the president's trips since the beginning of his term.
And unlike previous presidents, Trump has not temporarily divested from his businesses during his term. Most famously, remember Carter selling the peanut farm back in 1976. This leaves the president open to potential conflicts of interest, like political operatives, foreign dignitaries, or lobbyists being pressured to, for instance, stay at the Trump Hotel just down the street from the White House whenever they're in town, or the RNC holding its meetings and public events there, which they did plenty, which again is money in Donald Trump's pocket. And yes, he still holds financial interest in hotel projects based in Moscow, Istanbul, and Beijing. As for the swamp, well, it's more populated than ever. The head of the Labor Department, Eugene Scalia, has spent his career as a corporate attorney, busting unions and arguing against labor rights. Andrew Wheeler, current head of the EPA, is another corporate attorney and longtime lobbyist working for coal magnate Robert Murray and Murray Energy Enterprises to weaken and eliminate environmental protection laws, which is the exact opposite mission of the EPA, which was the creation of a former Republican president, Richard Nixon. And then there's Betsy DeVos, who heads the Department of Education. She never attended a public school, let alone had any experience in overseeing one, not even as a member of the local Board of Ed. The DeVos family holds financial interest in a number of private schools nationwide, and wouldn't you know, Betsy's mission during her tenure has been to siphon away federal money for public school education to redirect toward for-profit charter schools. And let's not even go into specifics as to Trump cabinet members and associates who have been indicted or convicted of federal crimes. The answer is 34 indictments, 7 convictions, including campaign advisors, his national security advisor, and his personal attorney. If that's your definition of a clean swamp, Joe, maybe you should join Mr. Wheeler at the EPA.
We simply are not going to agree on this topic. Let's agree to just disagree.
Been away. Haven't seen you in a while. How've you been? Have you changed your style? And do you think that we've grown up differently? Don't seem the same. Seems you've lost your feel for me. So let's leave it alone, 'cause we can't see eye to eye. There ain't no good guy, there ain't no bad guy. There's only you and me, and we just disagree.
Because of their long-standing friendship, and because Dan knows he's already spent enough time atop of his soapbox, Dan replies simply with a thumbs-up emoji.
Hey, Dan, just so you know, I'll always respect your opinion, and I'll always be your friend. No politics or opinions will destroy that, my friend.
Joe finishes that sentiment with a smiley-faced emoji. We jump ahead in time to 3 days later, November 7th. It's 11:51 a.m., and most of the major news outlets have just called the presidential election for Democratic candidate Joe Biden. Dan is so ecstatic that he posts a celebratory YouTube clip from a classic film.
Yeah.
What follows might be best described as the coda of our story.
Let the joyous news be spread.
Not funny, Dan. You should have more respect than that. President Trump is not the evil one.
I disagree. I find his actions reprehensible and embarrassing to the entire United States. And enough people do seem to agree with me that today has become a time to rejoice and exhale with relaxed laughter. We are so glad that in 72 days, Donald Trump will no longer be president of the United States.
You Democrats are the problem. You've done nothing but give this man and his family grief for 4 years, for nothing. You're the evil ones. You've pushed too far, my friend. I'm done.
As for respect, you voted for a man who contended that the 44th president of the United States was not, in fact, a citizen of the United States and therefore not eligible to have served his two elected terms. I can think of nothing less respectful than to accuse the president of the United States, a lawful American citizen, of being a foreigner. And if you don't like my posts, especially one as lighthearted as this, I suggest you either don't respond or unfriend me, whatever you want.
Dan, I've unfriended you. I'm done with disrespectful people like you. Have a nice life.
Joe did, in fact, unfriend Dan. They haven't spoken since. Not much later, Dan posted this in the comments.
Friends, Joe was my best friend in high school. We were as close can be. That was the end of it. No, yes, yes, too. I intend to keep this conversation up as an example as to what this president has also done to this country. He's divided families. Irreparably damaged lifelong friendships and loyalists who are not genuine left in their life as people. I'm sure.
Hey, Dan, I'm going to read your last line because you broke up. This is the coda, and it's an internet connection thing, so.
Okay. You want me to read it, or you want to read it?
I'll take it. That way I know it won't break. Friends, Joe was Dan's best friend in high school. They were as close can be. That was a long time ago. People change. I know they have. I guess Dan's changed, and so has Joe. But Dan intends to keep this conversation up on his page as an example of what this president has also done to this country. He's divided families, irreparably damaged lifelong friendships, and created a cult of loyalists who consider those who do not genuflect in the direction of their idol as evil. It's a damn shame.
Right, all right, but yet I know what I'm talking about. For the CIA, they wouldn't have you in the mafia.
Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends?
And scene.
And scene. Thank you, Agnes.
Thank you, Dan. That was an excellent play.
Yay, Agnes.
Yay, Dan. Yay, Joe. And yay to our listeners.
Yay to our listeners. Thank you. You know what? And I know that you're not really supposed to do, you know, take twos on live performances, whether it's radio or the stage. But I'm very glad you did a take two on at least that last paragraph.
Well, I feel like I felt like it could have been handled by the narrator or, you know, you. But I really, it's like, well, of course, because it's the internet, when you began to break up on that line, and that's the whole, you know, that's the whole raison d'être of the entire piece.
Absolutely.
I'll get the debrief started. And say that, you know, when you were talking about in that final closer, I was reminded how something like 75 years after Gettysburg, there's an old black and white silent film of the surviving Confederates walking up to the stone wall at the top of the ridge, where the old Union veterans stand waiting, where 75 years before they'd been laying down a blistering, murderous hail of mini balls. But this time they were waiting with their arms outstretched. And at the top of the ridge, they hugged as fellow Americans.
Americans.
And right now, we're at the 75 years before part of it, in everything except the gunfire, and I hope to God it doesn't come to that.
Yeah, this has been a real poison that he has dumped into the stream, and it's infected all of us in some form or another. I'm sure I've said it again, but where I grew up, you know, well, it's no surprise to anybody. West Virginia is a heavily red state. I believe 69% voted for Trump. I think that's second only to Wyoming, and only by a couple of fractions of points. And in my hometown, I'm sure it's at least consistent with that. I do have an old friend that lives there now named Bob Allen, who is like, he's like the liberal manning the gates against the onslaught. He's believing what he believes. He stands up for what he knows is right. And it's very hard for him to not take that personally when people snub him or insult him to his face on the streets of our hometown. What once used to be a place where people always said hello to one another. And if they were going to be mean to you, at least they did it behind your back. Now it's not so. Yeah,
and see, what I have experienced here, Dan, is that there's still that level of, you know, howdy neighbor, and it's very much present. But if you go one inch beyond vapid, and you know, nice, that was some fine weather we had last week. Yeah, sure was. They will eventually bring up Trump, and then shit goes south in a heartbeat.
You know, you gotta, for all of the things that one can say about the guy, you gotta give him credit for this. Boy, oh boy, he wanted attention and he knew how to get it. This guy is a mastermind of keeping the spotlight bright hot on him at all times. He has dominated the national conversation like no person in my lifetime. You know, I don't think back in the 70s, Nixon was even discussed as often in conversation, casual conversation, as this guy. And that's what he wants. He wants all of the attention. He just wants to be talked about and paid attention to. You know, I think it would be lovely if once we finally get him out of the White House, whenever that'll be, it would be lovely if we just all turn our collective backs to him, but that's not going to happen. But listen, I mean, the thing is, too, you know, and I want to talk about this with your listeners, and maybe you've already covered this ground. Forgive me if you have. But it's not just about me and my hurt feelings of that, you know. I haven't physically seen Joe since our 30th high school reunion. And, you know, this was pre-MAGA. This was definitely during the Fox News era, but we were still all collectively polite at that time to not really bring up politics, to let the day, which was back, by the way, in my backyard. I hosted both the 20th and 30th high school reunions of my class. not because I was like class president or anything, but just because I had a nice big backyard in the middle of Middleburn. So, you know, we were all just jazzed to see one another on that day and to be part of that experience of homecoming that nobody really brought up politics on that day back in, what would that have been, 2012, I guess. Yeah, 2012. And 22's coming up, and not only am I not hosting it, I'm not going to be there, you know, because I know, even if we don't discuss politics, by now I know what's going on. And for me, too, it was – and again, if you've covered this ground already, you'll have to forgive my covering it, too. But, you know, one of the shocks to me after November 3rd was how many people did vote for this guy. You know, not just based on the so-called projections, because we anticipated those would be flawed, but just seeing those raw numbers, you know, whatever it was, 47.9 or whatever it was, it's like, oh, my God. You know, all along I thought 35 to 40. I could live with 35 to 40 people being wing nuts, you know, expecting that 60% of the country would not fall for this. And yet I was wrong on that. I was dead wrong on it. Nearly half fell for this. We, you know, 5 million votes is nothing to sneeze at, but it's still scary that we were ever even that close to not being the majority.
Well, and address this too, please, Dan.
Yes.
I'm... Obviously, because of the nature of this program, I'm very clearly a partisan, and I have been fierce and ferocious about it for, you know, approaching our second decade. And while I, you know, there was plenty, and there still is plenty to talk about in terms of how much damage, say, George W. Bush did to our republic. Well, there's a difference between, and there may be overlap. I'm processing this as I go.
You and me both.
There may be overlap, but there seems to be a dramatic difference between even the hardest core Bush voters of 2003. Who were screaming, "I want George W. Bush to turn that Iraq into glass after what they done attacking our twin tires, them Iraqis and Saddam."
Right.
Even they seem positively rational compared to the maggots of 2016 and 2020.
But you know what, too? I think both you and I are guilty to a degree of either accidental or even deliberate ignorance in terms of, like, you know, saying that invective against Iraq, you know, and of let's turn Iran into a parking lot, and all of the racist stuff you and I have heard through the years growing up where we grew up, and racism is everywhere, not just where you and I grew up. It's all over the world, let alone the United States, let alone West Virginia or Alabama. But you and I both knew, like when I went to that high school reunion 8 years ago, or however long, what my math is, yeah, 8 years ago. Listen, I knew that some of my classmates were racists. I didn't know to what degree, but I did remember having grown up being told N-word jokes. And then that was a measure to see where I was with them. If I laughed, I was one of them. If I didn't, you know, I wasn't. And I consistently didn't laugh. I'm not patting myself on the back for this. It's just a statement of fact. It just never impressed me as funny, most racially based jokes. I did laugh in Animal House when this scene in the nightclub, "Do you mind if we dance with yo dates?" and so forth. I laughed then. But in general, I, in terms of overt racism, I forgave a certain amount of it at that time for the sake of civility. And maybe I wasn't right to do so. But I don't think I would make that mistake now. And, you know, that's really, you know, not only Trump, because it's very easy to throw it all on Trump, but really this started, you know, with the with the Federal Communications Act, the Fair Time and all that, giving Fox a network.
Well, no, that was the Telecommunications Act of 1996. Reagan had already killed the so-called fairness doctrine.
Exactly.
Yeah, when you and I were growing up, and Johnny Carson used to have fun with it. With an opposing point of view, and it would be Johnny Carson in that red and black plaid jacket with the red and black plaid shirt, you know, being a an ignorant bumpkin. There was an episode of Archie Bunker, or of All in the Family, where Archie got to deliver an opposing viewpoint. I remember that.
Yeah, it was classic.
And it used to happen all the. I remember seeing it as a child in real time, on the local TV stations. And now here with an opposing viewpoint. Yeah.
Right.
But
yeah, and, you know, listen. Yeah, we are a product of our times. We're both men of a certain age and environments. We're both white men who grew up in a southern to somewhat southern environment, and we all watch the same three channels. So we saw a lot of that. We all saw the same Johnny Carson and the same Flip Wilson sketches and the Dean Martin roasts and all that in the 1970s. And we saw cartoons that also had casual racism of various sorts, you know, whether it's the bucktooth Asian stereotype, Jerry Lewis or some of the Warner Brothers cartoons, or even some of the stuff that you'd look at now with Flip Wilson or some of the other black comics of that time doing stuff that was a little on the shuck and jive side. But, you know, because they thought it was funny, we could then laugh at it as well, we white people. But, you know, so we're all guilty of, I guess where I drifted away here, we're all guilty to some degree or another of indulging or entertaining racist thought, words, and behavior, myself included. You know, you and I endeavor, I think, every day to not do that. You know, it might be a natural inclination that comes with the privilege of being born a white man. I'm not sure, or an environment or history of 56 years in my case, soon to be 57 in March, of seeing so many things and hearing so many things that you can't help but let a little of it drip into your consciousness. But what I knew at high school reunions in 2012 was, oh, that guy over there, you know, he was the one that was constantly, you know, singing songs. I remember one about Daniel Boone, another one about Ellie Mae Clampett that were just as horrible as can be and not particularly funny. And I let that go. And now I can't let that go. And I don't think, you know, and this is another thing too, is that, you know, a lot of my fellow liberals, especially like in the New York area, there's a bit of a debate between, you know, how much should we respect the tears right now of our political opponents? How much should we let them grieve before we finally, you know, back the truck to the White House and start unloading the furniture? And right now, you know, in the words of the Dixie Chicks, or the Chicks as they're now called, I'm not ready to make nice. You know, that song's been going in my head a lot lately. I'm not ready to forgive being told fuck your feelings for 4 years.
Or called a snowflake.
And that's just personal. I'm not ready to forgive the 500-something kids in the cage. I'm not ready to forgive the 250,000 plus dead people. There's so much I'm not ready to forgive. And it's not just that I blame it all on Trump. I blame it on anybody that let him do it. He was a spoiled child. And we all.
And he enabled the worst and most toxic people in this country. I think, for instance, of the letter written by his uncle denouncing his nephew, Stephen Miller, saying, if Stephen Miller's policies were in place when our family came to the United States, our family never would have arrived here and would have, in fact, died in the Holocaust.
Mm, yeah. And again, it isn't that Trump owns racism for one example of one or homophobia or religious intolerance or misogyny. It you know, that is something that has been part of our American history since America, and it continues on. But what he did was he took that voice and he gave it permission to yell, and he handed it a microphone as well. And again, it's not just Trump, and it's not even just Fox News. You know, all of this was a horrible coincidental shitstorm with the surge of social media.
Yes, but again, you know, you meant a few minutes ago, Dan, you mentioned the Telecommunications Act of 1996. We have had similar conversations on this program for a long time, trying to pinpoint when everything begins to go sideways. And I think we've reached a consensus that it happens with the inauguration of the man I refer to as old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, on January 20th, 1981. Because every last aspect of liberal democracy that had been created by FDR and then by Truman and then by JFK and Johnson, that was when the full-scale assault on all of that began.
Yeah. And it's not really, you know, it's funny. That's history. We tend to think of history with as people in knee socks and the hats with the big feathers in them. But, you know, history happened 5 years ago. History happens today. And, you know, in our lifetime, there is plenty of history. And, you know, thank you, by the way, for you're much better at remembering the details, such as what was the name of that act. But I think that another, so you can go through all the chain of history, you know, if Nixon hadn't been caught, you know, that's one of the premises of the show and the comic Watchmen. But, you know, or okay, so Nixon was caught, Carter did become president. What if the Iran, you know, the Iran crisis hadn't happened? What if the hostages had gotten back, you know, within a couple of days rather than that long process?
Yeah.
You know, history is full of what ifs. And I do think that a big deciding factor.
What if John Hinckley had succeeded?
Yeah. And I think a big, you know, in the 21st century, I think that still the deciding historical occurrence is September 11th, 2001.
Yeah, for this century, that's the equivalent of November 22nd, 1963.
Yeah. And, you know, you can actually go back a little bit in time to 2000. What if, you know, what if the Supreme Court hadn't shut down the recount? What if Al Gore had been the president instead of George Bush? Would 9/11 have happened? You know, that's, of course, we can't reverse history. We can only, you know, we can only conjecture, and we can only create comic books and movies with these alternative universes. But it would, you know, I do think that the September 11th, I saw literally friends of mine who had not, who had been more or less middle of the road, who'd been decidedly purple, become suddenly red because, you know, of what they did to us on 9/11. And my anger was very strong, too. And my sorrow was very strong. Again, I lived within 2 miles of the World Trade Center on that day. I spent the next 2 weeks watching soldiers walk down Avenue A, which is where I lived in East Village, you know, with rifles patrolling, you know, something I'd never imagined would happen in America. But I do think, though, that became such a central point of anger, September 11th. And then we misplaced that anger by going into the big, stupid oil war.
Well, that was not a mistake. That was an intentional act on the part of the Bushies. But it's so ironic because I was today was a grim and kind of miserable gray day, but it wasn't pouring down the rain. And any day that it's not pouring is a good day for cooking outside, as far as I'm concerned.
Uh-huh.
And so I ran up to the grocery store. Agnes said that she'd like, she had a hankering for a good burger, and I make a good burger.
I have no doubt.
And so I ran up to the Wiggling Pig. I got some burger, and then I realized leaving that I was out of steak sauce. So I ran down to the Dollar General and walked in there to get, some Heinz 57 and A1. And lo and behold, while I was in there, and it just, and in the context of this conversation, it's all just sort of a goddess of irony kind of moment. Something I haven't heard in ages. I heard that drop dead, ignorant, stupid, jingoistic, bombastic piece of horseshit song by, Oh, who about the Statue of Liberty's gonna put a boot in your ass? Delivered by the red, white, and blue. Sorry about this.
The same one as I'm proud of being American. Is that
This was somebody will tell me the name of the artist here in a minute. He's from Oklahoma. He's got a chain of shitty restaurants and bars in shittier casinos and. But all you couldn't back in 2003, you couldn't turn the radio on without hearing it. We're gonna stomp some Arab ass, you know.
It's not Charlie Daniels, is it?
No.
Because I know he's jingoistic, but it was Lee Greenwood that I was thinking for probably.
That's God bless the USA.
Which listen, God bless the USA. I love that. As long as you don't.
Yeah, but the lyrics are past my ability to abide.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But, wait a minute. You were out. So
I heard that, and I just kind of stood there for a minute going, why is this song playing on the Dollar General Muzak?
Mm.
Because it seems kind of a strange thing to have pop up. I mean, sure, Frank Sinatra singing Fly Me to the Moon, or, you know what? Soft Cell's Muzak version of...
Where did our love go? Tainted Love.
Tainted Love, yeah. But that? Really? And
I don't know,
curiously enough, the Horn Family Community Congregation has yet to give me the name of that song. Ah, Toby Keith, there it is. Thank you, Jeremy in Vermont. Toby Keith, Angry American.
Is Toby Keith the one that wound up with Nicole Kidman for a number of years? Am I crazy about that?
No, that's Keith Urban.
Keith Urban.
And I think they're still all married up.
Keith Partridge. Yeah, they probably are.
Curiously, James in Illinois says, that was Toby Keith. My Dollar General's in the hood. We don't get that shit in there.
Right. That's where I was going. I think the algorithms steer the songs toward what they judge to be the clientele. So in Appalachian dollar stores, it's probably Lee Greenwood and Toby Keith, you know, and I don't know who else.
But, going back to the...
On the ones and the threes instead of the twos and the fours. Let me put it that way.
Going back to the origins of the piece that you wrote and we performed, as I told you earlier, for me, there's always a reference to Shakespeare.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, where old friends who have, you know, driven around country back roads, drinking cheap beer and cheaper wine, and have that commonality as the basis for their friendship of lo these many years. The first thing that came to mind when I first read the script was the interchange between Hal and Falstaff.
I knew you were going to say that.
But we have heard the bells at midnight.
As soon as you said wine and Shakespeare, I thought it's going to be Falstaff.
Yeah. Because, you know, in Elizabethan England, to be out and about at midnight and hear the bells at midnight, you were not up to any good.
This is true. I heard the bells at midnight, 1, 2, 3. I heard the bells at sunrise on occasion, which did not make my parents happy, I'm sure.
Yeah, I made my parents a little bit less than thrilled with their young scholar as well a few times.
Yeah, kept our A's and kept our grades up. That was a big thing. The grades stayed there, so a certain amount was tolerated, I suppose. I gave my kids a little of that room as well.
Yeah, but it in my case, it also began a predilection for not getting up and hearing the bells in church at 9 a.m. Suddenly sleeping in on a Sunday morning had a lot more to recommend it than getting screamed at by a Southern Baptist minister.
The only bells were going off inside your head.
You got
Quasimodo smacking against your skull with a big old hammer there.
Yeah, like Bugs Bunny once said, "Ooh, I'll never mix carrot juice and radish juice again."
Mm. But yeah, so here we are in the present time, I'm not ready to make nice, and it seems like, you know,
I'm not ready for that kumbaya moment, not yet.
Since we got kind of churchy a minute ago, we can work with the theme. And remember, most of these maggots, remember, maggots is simply an acronym, MAGA Trump supporters, maggots. It's just ironically convenient what it makes them sound like.
I know.
If you ask them, they're damn sure Christians. They're Christians.
Right.
And they know Jesus had a machine gun. But regardless of that, to the extent that you're not ready to make nice, within Christian theology, forgiveness is predicated upon repentance.
That's right.
So I don't see any particular need for any of us to engage in forgiveness as long as they are not repenting.
Especially as, they are disputing the, democracy itself. They are challenging that the most votes and the most electoral points wins the game. They're not giving up. They're not kumbayaing at all. And it's like whenever somebody makes a big screw up in public or in some form or another and they offer the non-apology, which is, I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings.
Bingo.
Or I'm sorry you feel that way. Anytime the word but is entered into an apology, it's not really an apology, is it? I know this from being married for a lot of years, and you probably have too. Sorry, honey, that I did that, but here's my reason.
No, it's funny you mentioned the but factor. Last night, in a peak of fit of pique and desperation to find something, anything that looked even remotely appealing, I fired up Netflix and I found a production by Netflix Germany.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a historical nerd, and I'm fascinated with something in history called the Battle of the Teutoburg Forest, which happened in 9 CE and changed the face of Europe forever. And so, lo and behold, I find this series from Netflix Germany called Barbaren, Barbarians. And I was really quite impressed with it because the Germans of 9 CE all speak German. I'm sure it's network standard German, but I don't have any way of knowing. But damned if the Romans don't speak pretty damn good Ciceronian Latin.
Wow.
And I can't remember the last time I heard somebody speaking decent Latin in a teleplay or a movie or a TV show.
No, I thought Romans spoke perfect Queen's English with that.
Precisely, old man. Yeah. Hail Caesar and all that rot. But no, they were speaking, and it was good Latin because they pronounced the letter V as a W, which the Romans did. It's not veni, vidi, vici, really, it's veni, weedy, weeky. But on top of it all, so the Germans speak German, the Romans speak Latin, and it's all nicely subtitled in English. And there was a funny little moment as Agnes and I watched, and she was liking it, and I was liking it. And a German fellow who is, of course, hopelessly in love with a German girl that he can never have because social status, said, "I love you." And before he could get the next word out, I said, "Yeah, but there's always an aber." And lo and behold, there was. Aber is the German word for but. And he's like, "Ich liebe dich, aber." And I was like, "Knew it! Nailed it!" Should have been a scriptwriter. But it's fun to watch those little things happen because that disjunction is the key to so many failed ideas. Everybody in America could go to the doctor when they're sick. But we have Republicans. We didn't have to put children in cages in concentration camps, but Trump became president. And it's that but, pun or whatever intended, it's that but that forever kicks our ass.
Well, to quote one of my, a movie I enjoy greatly, to quote Pee Wee Herman once said in Pee Wee's Big Adventure, it's like everybody has a big butt. Tell me about your big butt, Simone.
Quite the philosopher, that Pee Wee Herman.
I know he is, but what are you?
See? And truly a fan.
No cowbell for that, Bob?
Definitely cowbell. I was reaching for it. I'm doing two or three things at one time.
If I have to ask for my own cowbells, then I've become either Jeb Bush or Donald Trump saying, love me, Michigan, or whatever he said. Love me, women. Love me, suburban women.
Housewives. Suburban.
Love me, suburban. Love me, housewives.
Housefraus, since we're playing with German.
Wasn't that a song maybe, by Foghat or so? Love me, housefrau, all night long. Maybe I'm just making.
If there wasn't, there damn sure should be.
There's another tangent that I want to just sort of approach then for a second, because we were talking way back about 15 minutes ago, maybe, about George W. Bush and all of the reprehensible things that happened during his administration. But now, it just shows how quickly legend and image supplants what actually happened to create what we call history. You know, it's now, compared to Donald Trump, and because of a lot of good PR on his part, George W. Bush is now looked at as sort of this lovable teddy bear of a guy. You know, he poses with the Obamas. He supports the Joe Biden for being the president, not only in the voting, but now that the vote is over, he's saying, enough with that, Donald Trump, your time is done. But those are all great things, but it doesn't wipe the slate entirely clean for those thousands of lives we lost in Iraq and Afghanistan and the arguable negligence that contributed to the deaths of over 3,000 or about 3,000 people on September 11th. You know, the deliberate inattention to detail, again, that Bush had that could have caused September 11th, but arguably, is now looks like nothing compared to Donald Trump and his famous inattention to things like presidential daily briefs or security briefs of any kind, intelligence. He looks at none of it. He only wants to read about himself and the things that make him happy. He is a child, and we indulge the child because we do not want the child to have a tantrum. I know this. I've had kids. Even Gus and Phoebe, both wonderful kids who've...
Oh, God, yes.
They had their share of tantrums. And I know. I've fallen prey to it, too, where it's like when your kid has a tantrum, all you just want is for that kid to just shut up, go to sleep, leave daddy alone. Please, here, just have it. Just here, eat the chocolate cake. Just eat the cake.
Here's the whole cake.
Okay, watch the construction video for the third time in a row instead of going to sleep. I don't care. Daddy's going to sleep. You go to sleep whenever you want. So you leave the White House whenever you want, little Donnie. The country will go on with or without you. Just shut up already.
I know. We yearn for it, don't we?
We do. And, it's funny, too, how people – I've read plenty online where people say, like, well, history is going to really come down harshly on Donald Trump. As if any, listen, you care about history, historians. My daughter majors in history. She'll be getting her degree in less than a year in history. But for most of us, or many of us, history is image. History is what we want it to be, what we're told it is, what we see in movies and television shows. Where does it come from? And in a movie itself, the man who shot Liberty Valance. I won't get the quote right, but it says something to the fact of when you have the truth, when you have the choice to print between either truth or legend, print the legend. People want the legend. Legend is fun, and legend is easy to understand. I don't think there will be one singular history about Donald Trump. There are going to be like there is now, multiple narratives, depending on what history you want. I mean, we have already got it in present time. What news do you want? Do you go to CNN for that news? MSNBC for that news?
And see, that is something that we really do need to spend more time on as a nation, and people who practice what I do here need to make clearer. And I try to be upfront about it. This is an opinion program. I will give you straight news. I will tell you the who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much. But the value in that is to then try to understand what it means. And the what it means part of it involves opinion. It's when opinion stealths as news itself that we get into trouble, Dan. And again, it's a function of being, I guess I now qualify as a geezer. No offense to the members of the community, even older than I. But I'm so old I can remember when the evening news was taken up with people, reporters, standing up and giving reports to Uncle Walter.
Right.
About the who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much of a particular issue. And you had nerdy people who would report on economic facts without delving into opinion on it. But the rise of the 24-hour news cycle changed everything, and probably not for the better. At one point in time, R.E. Ted Turner was one of my heroes, and still is to a certain extent. The man was a genius, and he's
visionary.
He is eaten up with Lewy body dementia now.
Yeah.
But my God, in his day, truly a visionary. And a Renaissance man who was going to drink life to the lees, as the poet put it.
Yeah, I think he was kind of our Howard Hughes of that next generation, to only without the long fingernails and jars of urine.
Right. You know,
younger Howard Hughes, the dashing figure who invents his own stuff when he's dissatisfied with what exists, so forth, and the Jane Fonda thing and all of that. That's. Listen, it's a hell of a life.
Well, it was, and oddly enough, out of the requirement that his little UHF TV station have something that passed for news in order to pass muster with the FCC, came the idea that we needed a 24-hour news channel. And his vision of it was that there really would be 24 hours of news. With a little bit here and there for maybe some opinion, Crossfire, Larry King. But for the most part, he wanted to have people scattered across the planet giving reports on what was happening all over the world. And, you know, at one point, the tagline, the slogan was bringing you the world.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who run budgets for things like that rapidly figured out that it costs a lot more to buy uplink time and pay reporters to live in Beijing and New Delhi and Cairo and Tel Aviv and Ankara and literally have a reporter Brasilia and Buenos Aires and Santiago. It costs a lot more to do that than it does just to put people in front of a camera and let them spout off. And that
right.
And that is how opinion ruined the news.
Well, also opinion brings things. People care more about opinion, honestly, than they do about countries that they'll probably never visit. You know, we are by nature a very solipsistic. We're very navel gazing population in general. But then certainly, as media has progressed to become more and more of what it is and will become, we just continue to dive deeper and deeper into the navel, because what we really love is to hear ourselves talk, and we love to
hear other people tell us those things back to us, maybe in a different form. We love it. And listen, it's hard to believe, you know, you think back, well, Broadcast News was the movie that was a pretty big hit and so forth, earned some Oscars. That was 33 years ago.
Yeah, it blows my mind.
I know. In pop culture history, that's ancient. But so even back in 87, it was approaching those subjects, right? It was dealing with those subjects because James L. Brooks, who wrote and directed that movie, knew and I think had come from some – maybe had come – no, at least he came from Mary Tyler Moore. I don't know if he came from a news background besides helping create Mary Tyler Moore. But anyway, he was keenly aware of what was happening in the news media business, and that movie reflects that. Where they talk quite bluntly about, we're going to shut down the London office, so we're going to do this or that, because ratings just aren't what they were. And listen, newspapers are you know, they're still holding on and with the big brands like the New York Times or the Washington Post, but a lot of local papers, it's not that they're completely dead, it's that they're online, or the paper editions rely mostly on wire service stuff that they just paste together. But you remember the big central scene in that movie, Broadcast News, was the scene where William, and maybe, did you and I even discuss this? We might have the last time I was.
We have to, yeah, we have to a certain degree, yeah.
Yeah, where William Hurt pretends to cry.
Right, in the B-roll.
On the B-roll, and how that is a tremendous scandal. That is just staggering that anybody could stoop so low. Now,
career-ending.
Now, that's, that you'd be excoriated if you didn't provide that reaction shot. How are the viewers going to relate to the newscaster unless we make them a part of the story and show them emoting properly?
You know, that is the central scene, and God, who didn't fall in love with Holly Hunter in that film?
Oh my God. Well,
and way too many of us, myself included, identified not with William Hurt but with Albert Brooks.
Oh, of course. Oh, I was a total Albert Brooks. You know, I fell in love with so many of my so-called quote-unquote best friends who were girls or women and never told them until it was too late, et cetera. Or when I did, it didn't matter. I was a total Albert Brooks. I'm lucky to be married.
Wait a minute. That was just automatic.
My wife was aggressive enough that she just didn't even bother with the horseshit. We went pretty quickly into love and stayed there. So.
But there's a scene in Broadcast News where he phones in some basic information for William Hurt to be fed into his IFB.
Uh huh.
And after William Hurt repeats what Albert Brooks has just said over the phone, I say it here, it comes out there.
Right.
And that's my favorite line out of the movie. Because I feel like it happens to me some. In fact, it happened this week. On Monday, on what I refer to as my filthy morning habit, you know, Morning Joe.
Mm-hmm.
12 years after we started talking about this very issue, the Morning Joe crew finally caught up with the idea of wondering what it is that pursuit of happiness in the Declaration of Independence actually means. So they had they've had a Yale historian on all this week, a guy named Thomas Ricks, and I bought his book. It's called First Principles. It's about what the founders and framers, how they studied the Greeks and the Romans, among other things.
Uh-huh.
And so they were talking about what that means, the pursuit of happiness as opposed to the pursuit of property. And our resident historian, Dr. Bill O'Brien, has been trying to explain that to people for literally 12 years plus, and not just on this network. He had an entire grant from the United States Department of Education to try to teach history teachers in this state how to teach history.
Mm-hmm.
And he delivered this brilliant lecture on the pursuit of happiness. And I mean, it just gobsmacked me. And so, you know, there I was watching Monday. I think I tweeted, I say it here, it comes out there. And it actually happens a lot because we spend a lot of time ahead of the curve here on this program. I don't know why. I don't know how it works out that way, but we do.
You know, it's inevitable. I mean, you do have a platform, and you have an international audience, and you're not Larry King. I don't think your listenership comes in the millions, but it's something, and maybe that's all it takes. You know, it's like a COVID virus. It just takes a little bit of setup, and the next thing you know, it spreads. And I've just compared you to a virus, Bob.
And
shame on
you. Thank you so very much for that, Dan. I can't tell you how much it means to me.
You're at least adequate.
This is entirely adequate radio, and I will never forget that.
But not having read nearly the amount of books you have, you know, and not certainly having read this latest one or seen this lecture that you were talking about, The Pursuit of Happiness, it just at least made me think about what happiness is depending on where and when you are, right? You know, I mean, in the mid-1700s, what happiness was then, what made a person happy or at least content is vastly different than now. And certainly in another country, in other cultures, within the United States, both past and present, happiness is defined in very, very often different measures. Connect this too with the Joe play, best friend. You know, Joe's standard of what makes him happy is probably different than mine. I don't want to drop too many bombs on Joe because we have history together, and I don't want to say his
name. No, and I didn't want to make him sound like a complete dick either.
Right. But we all have Joes in our lives. We all have those people that have gone to that side. And in Joe's case, from what I know, I was best man at his first wedding, and it didn't last that long. And then eventually after his divorce, he met up with another woman who was very religious, evangelical religious.
I could have told you before you said it.
Yeah. They got married and he's evangelical. And
she dragged him off to church.
Yeah. So listen, I don't know Joe's beliefs on race or other issues. But what I do know, because he doesn't post, you know, on his Facebook page, he doesn't post a whole lot of political stuff. He would probably describe himself in many ways as apolitical, because if you go to his page, it's mostly Bible passages with those little, you know, sort of like the cards, you know, the little card images of a sunset or, you know, a boat on the ocean, that sort of thing. And then a Bible verse in some nice font or another, or he'll post pictures of their cats. You know, he's one of them. He's like a cat publican. He didn't back down from a fight with me, but in general, he doesn't seem to be, at least on Facebook, he's not that outspoken, not nearly as outspoken as I am about things, quote unquote, political. And I have had friends that have said, well, you know, why even go there? Why get political with your friends? Why not just leave it alone? And, you know,
but I'd say 99% of the time, Dan, it's not us getting political. It's the other side often spoiling for a fight. That's what I was talking about here in West Virginia.
But some people, right. You know, but listen, social media is social, right? It's social gathering of a sort, especially right now during these times. We're not getting together face to face very much at all, thankfully, or at least those of us who have any sense aren't. But it's social, and you and I both were raised for much of our lives. I shouldn't speak for you, but I can only imagine that you were raised as I was, to say that when you're in a social situation, take it easy, bring it down. Don't bring up things that are going to cause a big fight, whether it's politics or sex, religion, the big things, even government, you know, or whatever. All of that stuff is just leave it alone. Stay pleasant. If you're going to get controversial, talk about sports. That's the controversial stuff, you know.
Growing up in Alabama, that could lead to the shootings in the yard, you know, Alabama and Auburn. No kidding.
Right.
And maybe we're just that cranky and contentious of people.
But this is the thing, though, too, is that I have a lot of friends, both
in-person friends. I've got work friends. I've got Facebook friends that I'll never meet. You have friends, and I have friends through you now by coming on your show enough times, whether it's Darlene in Connecticut or Tracy or some of the people whose names I forget that have certainly entertained me and informed me. Both Benoit and I have been on and when I've listened. But I have friends, a lot of friends, and they're of all different backgrounds. And so if I don't stick up for them, then what kind of friend am I?
Right.
You know, friends stick up for one another. That's what I learned back in the back in the backyards and the playgrounds, is if your friend's getting picked on, you're supposed to at least stand up with your friend, maybe take the licks with him. You don't run away when you see your friend getting picked on. That's not good backyard politics.
Yeah, as Sam Kinison noted in his bit, when Jesus comes home after 40 days hanging out with the disciples, it's the whole "if Jesus was married" bit, and the wife and his wife comes out and says, "Where you been?" And the next thing you hear is 12 voices at the same time saying, "See you later, Jesus."
And listen, I've never been a very good physical fighter. If mine were a boxing record, it'd probably be something like 0-68, or maybe 1-67 if you count the time I hit my older sister in the eye with my Dr. Seuss lunchbox. I think that was my only pugilistic victory of my entire life. I cheated. But the rest of the time, I've gotten my ass kicked physically because I'm just not into fighting. I don't have the heart to put up fists. I've always fought with words, with just trying to wear people down, with either make them laugh so they forget it, try to reason with them, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't, or just get them bored or restless enough that they just want me to shut up. So back off, just because they've got other things to do.
Well, and I'm much the same way. I was taught by my mother growing up that it takes more courage to walk away from a fight than it does to stand in one.
Yeah.
And that mostly worked where I grew up. It does not work here.
No.
Because I tried it with my son, they just went ahead and kicked the shit out of him.
What did he eventually do?
Fighting back.
Good. I wish I had. I just didn't have it in me. I just let him.
And
let
it,
him
take, it, takes, it takes a lot to push me to that point. But when I get there, you know, all in, just all in. And I can count those times on one hand, but they weren't fun. And you don't wind up proud of yourself after you're done. But looking back, you try to, where was the disengagement point? And quite often you find yourself saying, well, you know, there really wasn't one.
And that's how we can tie it back into what you and I do every day, which is we have to stand up for ourselves, for our country, and for our friends. And if that means being unpleasant, we got to be a little unpleasant here. And if you can't take it, you can go ahead and unfriend me. You know what? I got a lot of friends, and I haven't seen some of them. Listen, the memories are the memories. You know, the good times in the back roads and getting drunk, going to drive-in movie with Joe. You know, he and I were, you know, we always sat on the band bus together. We both played trumpet all throughout high school. All of this, all the stuff that Agnes already said in your narration, those memories are dear to me. And nothing takes away those memories. But on the other hand, as a human being, I don't think I have much more of a use for Joe. I think, honestly, it's not like, oh my God, this was something that shattered me. Here, reading those words from Joe, we're done, and being unfriended by him, and knowing that we'll never claim friendship again. It's sad, but it's not shattering because I'm long since out of there. You know?
Right, but you also understand that is the distinct difference between the past, the present, and the future. That's in the past. I don't know if you've ever read it. If you never have, I cannot recommend it enough. It is the great American political novel. Robert Penn Warren's All the King's Men.
I have read it. I read it back in was it college or high school?
In an English class at WVU called Southern Writers.
Now, I think I read it in high school, and I certainly saw the movie a couple of times with Broderick Crawford.
Well, if you recall, and I commend the novel to everyone in this community as well, it also has some ugly-ass racism in it, as does so much of American literature. And you can only acknowledge how ugly it is and move on past it and see if there's anything redemptive about the rest of the body of the work. And in the case of all the King's Men, there is, because Robert Penn Warren is channeling the politics of his time. You know, it's like trying to describe George Wallace without mentioning the Stand in the Schoolhouse Door or segregation yesterday, segregation today, segregation forever. You can't do it. It can't be done. He's not. You cannot take him out of that milieu. But there is a meditation.
You don't want to soften his image. He should never be a teddy bear any more than George W. Bush should be seen as a teddy bear.
But there is a meditation in that book that speaks directly to the topic at hand. And the shorthand for it is the narrator, Jack Burden's meditation on the friend of your youth. And he talks about how in your youth, with the friend of your youth, you build up a store of friendship capital. And then in adulthood, you begin to draw down that capital, and you can never replace it with more. For he is the friend of your youth, the quote goes. And there will come...
go ahead.
And there will get to a point where you draw it down to a zero balance.
This is what makes great writers, you know, that they see these things. They're in plain view of all of us, but they see it, and they're able to articulate it.
Yeah.
Those are the great ones.
And that, you know, that's and for anybody who has old, dear old high school friends on Facebook or any other social media, it's that. And what you're trading on is not the present, for the most part, but the past.
And listen, I mean, at least Joe is just a friend. He's not blood relation. I do have Trump relation. People who are relatives who I know supported him in 16, and I think probably voted for him in 2020.
Same here.
Again, those, at least in my family, they're second cousins. They aren't ardently political on Facebook or, as far as I know, anywhere else. You know, they just think, they are the ones that will say, well, I don't agree with all the things he says, and I'm not a racist, but he's done great things with the economy. And, you know, I know this goes down many, many avenues. I do think, again, I'm not ready to make nice. I'm not ready to forgive. I'm not ready to turn anybody into teddy bears. But there is so much nuance. There is so many different degrees and so many rationales behind Trumpism. It's not all one big thing. And, you know, it could just have been for Joe. It could be abortion. It could be a single issue thing. You know, I'm Christian. I'm against abortion. I'm for the presidential candidate who says he's against abortion. You know, it could be as simple as that.
But what makes me crazy out of all of that, Dan, is that those kinds of positions cannot withstand logical scrutiny.
And also, who am I to tolerate somebody saying, well, I'm against abortion? Because, you know what? It's not that I'm for abortion. Like, hey, you know, I'm going to start, going around trying to get pregnant women to, hey, you know, I'll take you to the clinic for a free one if you hop in this car with me. I'm not recruiting people, but I simply believe it's not my business to make those choices.
Because the classic answer is, oh, you're not for abortion? Well, I understand. Please don't ever have one. Nobody's going to force you to.
Right.
And then, you know, then you have to move into, well, what right do you have to interfere with the constitutional rights of someone else? And I've presented the argument on this program about addressing that by saying, okay, well, you know, you want to make abortion illegal. Abortion is a constitutional right. which constitutional right are you going to be okay with when somebody comes for one of them that you care about? Because right. once you start getting rid of them, it's like peanuts and potato chips. One, you know, you can't have just one. Because there are,
take away the guns.
Guns, but here's one that's even simpler. Because we've had this idea of originalism and textualism so much in our face because of the confirmation hearings for Justice Handmaid.
Handmaid, that's what you call it, yeah.
If you're an originalist, explain to me how the framers of the Constitution foresaw televangelists. Mm. I mean, at what point? Yeah, how does the First Amendment protect Kenneth Copeland? How does the First Amendment protect Joel Osteen or Paula White or any of these clowns?
Maybe some of our friends who would have been 3/5 of a person back then would have an opinion about that. I don't know.
Yeah. How does the First Amendment protect journalistic organizations that call for the beheading of political enemies? You know, the head of the FBI and Anthony Fauci. But
yet,
yeah, there was that story where Mark Zuckerberg said that Steve Bannon didn't deserve to have his Facebook page shut down for calling for Fauci and Christopher Wray to be beheaded.
Well, what's another long-time principle of journalism? If it bleeds, it leads. Right?
Sure.
They're in the not news business, not journalism business, but they're in the media business, and stuff like that. It's always gasoline on the fire, and they want that fire lit.
Right. And Henley.
That's what your show's going to be like.
Don Henley put it perfectly when he said, "She can tell you the bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5. She can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye. It's interesting when people die. Give us dirty laundry."
That's right. You know, it very well could be true that if Biden, you know, once Biden is in office and things have at least, in terms of the spotlight, settled down a bit with Trump and his many minions and acolytes, you know, we might hit a period of relative national news boredom where all of the reporting is going to have to be about things like, you know, somebody got appointed to the EPA, or, you know, a bill is working its way through Congress that might do something that is of benefit to human beings. This is going to be relative boring news after what we've just had for the 4 years. But, you know, I remember Patton Oswalt had a routine on one of his first albums. I think Werewolves and Lollipops, when George Bush was still in office, George W. Bush was still in office, where he does this routine where he says, somebody comes up to him after show and says, "You comedians, just wait until George W. Bush is out of office. You are going to have what's going on? Oh, okay. You know, you're going to have no material. You know, you're going to have nothing to make jokes about." And you know, Oswald replies, "You know what? If the exchange is comedians are going to have to run out of jokes to get George W. Bush out of office, you know, I'll scrub floors. You know, if the reward is that we no longer have demons shooting hellfire from the skies, I'm all for it. You know, so we'll see what the Bob Kincaid Show might bring to its listeners in 2021 and beyond.
Well, I mean, I've got a pretty good idea, Dan, that even if our side stood down and, metaphorically speaking, disarmed, the other side's not. Because, as the late great Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, famously noted, that's a big dollar. Keeping the mouth breathers and the knuckle walkers ginned up. It's a huge dollar. And so there, look, we got rid of George W. Bush, and no, the comedians didn't starve.
No.
because
there's always somebody else.
Well, it's not just that there's always somebody else. We got to watch the Republican Party go full on Klansman over over the guy that John McCain referred to as that one in our White House. That one.
Nice emphasis on White House. White House. That's good. That was good. Yeah. No, the
and so they, you know, they're not likely to go away. And the thing is, what's odd is that the fringe has become the mainstream.
Yeah.
In the right wing.
If you don't think Fox and Tucker Carlson are mainstream news, you aren't paying attention to ratings. That's mainstream. No, that's not fringe.
And way back before the November 2016 election, and I can't forget this. In the radio show that he used to host, Steve Bannon was engaged in conversation with Milo Yiannopoulos. And they said straight up that upwards of 60 to 70% of the Republican base were white nationalists. And I remember all the way back before any of this shit blew up, saying, please, for God's sakes, believe them, because they've been turning it in this direction for generations. And maybe folks get tired of hearing me say this, but if everybody I mean for people to remember, because I'm deadly in earnest about history. Ronald Reagan opened his 1980 presidential campaign at the Neshoba County, Mississippi Fairgrounds.
Oh, my goodness.
In the same county where Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner were murdered by the Klan and buried in an earthen dam.
In Philadelphia, Mississippi.
In Philadelphia, Mississippi. I know you know this story. And Ronald Wilson Reagan opened his campaign for president after receiving the Republican nomination at the Neshoba County Fairgrounds, where he delivered an address on states' rights.
That doesn't even qualify as a dog whistle. That's a
bullhorn.
That's a bullhorn. That's a megaphone.
And it's been, you know, it's Rush Limbaugh saying to an African American caller who was challenging, "Call me back when you get that bone out of your nose." Or asking why all African Americans, composite drawings of African Americans look like Jesse Jackson.
But you know,
I mean, it's sunk deep into the soft and tender part of that culture. It's who they are.
It's in all America. We can't reverse time. We can't reverse history. We are a country that was formed on a bunch of people, white people coming over from Europe with guns and ammunition and just landing wherever we landed and saying, okay, now we own this. And anybody that came up to them said, well, no, we've been here for, you know, centuries now. Like, my family's been here. It's like, fuck you. Boom. You're dead. Here, take this blanket full of smallpox. Boom, you're dead.
Right, or the classic response of, well, hail, when something like reparations comes up, which I fully support. Hail, I never owned no slaves. Well, nobody's talking about you, bub. We're talking about systemic theft over the course of generations and whether or not people are entitled to be compensated for it.
A debt that has never been repaid.
Yeah.
As long as that debt is outstanding, it needs to be repaid.
Debt is outstanding, Dan, the interest is racking on it.
Yeah. There are so many debts to be paid. We've became accustomed to just, we're big and we're white and we're American and we come in and we take what we want. You got a problem with that? Here's our gun. What do you think now? You still got a problem?
And there's a few minutes remaining in the program. Let me just take a few to share with you some of the responses from the community.
Yeah.
Talking about old friends, old connection. Lee in New York writes, at my first summer job, I worked with another teenager. Many years later, I looked him up on LinkedIn. We connected. He's an extreme Republican. He focused on accumulating wealth. He succeeded. He looks down on you for not being rich, too. If he did it, you should have. He is a self-made man. When he turned 50, he gave himself a present. He got bariatric surgery. The guy who did it all by himself with no help from anyone could not control his weight. I'm not fat-shaming, Lee says, but do not tout your independence when you need help. Needless to say, we are no longer in contact.
Needless to say.
Yeah. Let's see.
How many of our proud non-mask wearers set up GoFundMe pages after they got the Rona, huh?
Precisely.
Because they didn't have health insurance, or didn't have adequate health insurance, because they didn't like the black guy with the funny name was pushing it.
Yeah.
So I'm supposed to give you $10 or $50 in your GoFundMe? I'd say go fuck you. What next? Who else?
Jude in the Great Northwest really did very much enjoy our little bit of radio theater.
Thank you, Jude. I got to say too, we had no rehearsal whatsoever on it, so I'm glad you forgive our stumbles, and I would cut some of my soapboxing down on it. So I appreciate your patience and your kind words.
And Jude says, I felt the impact in Agnes's serious and verbal tonal shift when reading about election results and the energy we women held for this shift to occur. Thank you, Agnes, Dan, and you, Bob. This is so healthy. And I think it was. I think that's a really good word, Dan. This was a healthy thing.
Healthy, yeah, that is good. That's very insightful, actually, because that's really my intent in coming on tonight. Because Bob, you just have such a grasp on the bigger picture, the details that I often elude me or that I can't hold on to like you can. But what I can do, I think, is and what I'm interested always in expressing is how things feel. You know, how the news makes us feel, how entertainment makes us feel. You know, the memories it brings up. You know, that personal thing that I did hope with this to bring out there, and that others might respond. And I'm glad that they are.
And Ralps said, golf clap to Bob and Dan and Agnes. Well, thank you. Thank you, Ralps.
Thank you.
And I do need to jump out and interject that we still have, fundraising never kind of, I wish it could end, but the only way it ends is if this program does.
Hey, and bills got to be paid.
That would suck a lot. I'm trying to see here exactly where we are. There we are. Thank you to Kevin. Kevin jumped in, so we are now down to $125 to go on both on $25 to go on Chris's challenge, and then there's another $100 to go on Yuki's. So we could get caught up big time if in the next 12 minutes, and I know that's tough. Again, thank you, Kevin. If we could bring in $25 to finish Chris's challenge. And, I don't know, it'd be kind of miraculous, but $100 to finish Yuki's. And that's Chris's Fuck Trump with a great big rainbow-colored poker. So that $25
that
remain on that.
That was the word I was expecting, poker, but good enough.
Yes. Well, we're not always so successful at remaining SFW, safe for work, but every now and then I make a passing attempt at it.
Yeah, gather the kids around. It's like listening to old Jack Benny shows. This thing.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Let me do one other thing in the time remaining to us. And one of these days, we are just gonna we're gonna do again what we did a couple of weeks ago and just sit around and have fun.
I'm thinking maybe sometime between Thanksgiving and Christmas, maybe in a slow news cycle where nobody can feel too bad about just sort of taking their minds off of stuff and just kick back and just relax and have fun. I'm
absolutely
down for that.
But I, you are you know, you can take the boy out of the hills, but you can never take the hills out of the boy. And so you're going to be a West Virginian for as long as, you know, you're on this planet. I imagine your heart is probably transforming into a West Virginian as well. And you know, you'll know that when your heart starts, you know, hankering for, fried eggs swimming in bacon grease, and you have to tell your heart, no, you can't be that much of a West Virginian.
Not even a pepperoni roll. I don't think I could have a pepperoni roll at this point.
Oh, that's tough. That right there is tough. God, I always loved the pepperoni rolls that were there. You remember the pepperoni rolls in the mountain lair?
At that little
bakery there. Oh, they were coming up out of Fairmont, because the home of the origin of the pepperoni roll is at Country Club Bakery in Fairmont. This is an unpaid product placement. And they are the best in the world, because instead of little slices of pepperoni, there's sticks of pepperoni. There's three sticks in every pepperoni roll from Country Club Bakery.
You know what? You're bringing it all back to me. I do remember those from the mountain lair. They were a good, quick, you know, between class lunch too.
Yeah,
and they were cheap.
Yeah,
they're really
perfect. God, I think maybe they were 50 cents a piece or something. You know, back in 1983.
Yeah, and if you had it after class is done, they went really well with beer.
Down at the Blue Tick Tavern.
Yeah.
Yeah, and grab a couple of pepperoni rolls, go down there and drink a few 10-cent drafts.
Yeah, and play the pinball machine. The Haunted House pinball machine was my favorite there.
Oh my God, I'd forgotten that. Yeah. Well, so, you know, you are and thank you. Earther just jumped in, and we are now down to $15 to go on Chris's challenge. Thank you.
Go.
Yeah, we're so close. We are so close. But today, and I mean, it's embarrassing enough that Make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice said, "Well, I just can't hardly accept the idea that there weren't no fraud in this here election, where the rest of the country didn't vote the way us decent, God-fearing mountaineers did. But I reckon if Joe Biden is finally proved to have not frauded his way into the White House, we might accept him as president." That was bad enough. The man is a walking embarrassment. But he has become, Dan, dangerous to human health and human life.
Well, I've seen his picture. I mean, you know, besides his self, why don't you elucidate?
Well, it's what he said, and this is, you know, this is ripped from the pages of the headlines, like that program you used to work on said.
Uh-huh.
And he gives his coronavirus update ever so often. And today he said something that you just don't ever want to hear from the governor of a state. I mean, it was mind-boggling. And I'm using that in the purest sense of the word. We passed another milestone here. For the fifth time in the past 7 days, as the Charleston Gazette reports, we set a record for the highest number of new daily cases, 885. We got 277 people hospitalized as of Wednesday. Last week it was 290, so it came down a little bit. But the deaths are still climbing. We've had 81 reported deaths since last Wednesday and 553 overall. And that may not sound like much compared to a New York City. But in a state like this, as beaten and bedraggled and benighted as it is, that's terrifying, because we do not have the infrastructure to handle it.
And listen, I don't mean to sound like I'm beating on my old home state. I don't mean it at all. But the fact is West Virginia is not a very physically healthy state. I mean, in terms of things like obesity, alcohol overconsumption, drug addiction, there's so many smoking. It leads in almost all the categories of unhealthy lifestyle, unhealthy living, and a lot of people don't have health insurance, or very very inadequate health insurance. to cover only the basics and the rest you're stuck with yourself. It's the worst state I could imagine living in the midst of an epidemic.
And so I will remind folks, because periodically I get questions, but there is still one less smoker in the state of West Virginia.
Thank you. Thank you for being that person, yes.
This is day 59. But what he said was, what Jim Justice said was as follows, including my, I have to do the Jim Justice voice. It can't be helped.
Please do.
We've had every opportunity in these counties to slow it down, and I've been out in front of you over and over saying test, test, and in a lot of situations, we didn't do it. I say wear your mask, and we didn't do it. We're continuing in every way to look at each and everything as far as the possibility of shutting something down, whatever it may be. We sure don't want to go that way if we can possibly avoid it. And then he said this, Dan, and this is the part that gave me chills, and not in a good way. I don't know what else I can do. I've given it everything I have. I don't know what else I can do. Of course, he waits until after he's been reelected to say that. So we're going to have four more years of I don't know what else I can do.
Well, listen.
And there are still idiots in this state who are saying, we need to go back to sending our youngins to school. They need to go to school so they can get the Roner and bring it home to granny and granddad who's raising them because mommy and daddy is meth heads.
And listen, take out the accents, and I still see that stuff up in my little Rockland County suburb, 35 miles away from New York City. There are Joes everywhere. There are West Virginians everywhere, whether they are West Virginians at heart or in spirit, let's just say.
Well, what drives me bananas, Dan, what drives me bananas is this idea of I don't know what else I can do. Now, there's a Republican governor right across the Ohio, River. In Ohio, yeah. Mike DeWine, and he's decided that they're going to have to put some teeth behind the mask mandate. And there will be consequences in Ohio for non-compliance. But here, like I said, I was putting gas in the car, I guess it was Tuesday night.
Oh, yeah, the young lady.
Yeah. And the two people, the two people working in the store, no mask. And people are still saying, it'll be gone in a little bit because the election's over.
Well, and you've probably covered this too, and I know we're coming up on the hour, but, we see that Pfizer has said that they're 90% there with the vaccine, and that they're hoping for maybe an April debut with it. And, of course, Trump is hopping. Mad that didn't come out before the election, and he's claiming now, of course, deep state within Pfizer, because as we all know, the pharmaceutical industry is rife with left wing radical liberals.
Well, yeah, but it is also rife with grift, because now we find out that the CEO of Pfizer was out there insider trading for all his for all he was worth.
Oh, definitely. But it is also something to note that Pfizer did not participate in Operation Warp Speed. My understanding of it is that they were separate from that mission. They did it on their own because I think they wanted to keep all the profits. If they shared any of the interest with the government, then they risk losing their slice of the pie. And of course, Donald would probably eat that pie up and gobble it and grab the rest of it while he's at it and claim he invented it.
Sure. And the other, with the Pfizer vaccine, whatever stock they have of it or have manufactured of it, or the futures in it, to use trading terms, 92% of it's already been bought by wealthy nations because capitalism. Yeah. But back to this idea of he's done everything he can and he don't know what to do. Again, I happen to be out and in a, you know what Sheetz are, the convenience store?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
In Pennsylvania, too.
Yeah, it's the Western PA equivalent of Wawa in Eastern PA.
Yeah. I think there's even some in New York State.
Yeah, they're really nice. They are. And they got nice coffee bars and stuff. But two of Fayette County's finest walk in. They're in separate cruisers. And, you know, they're squeaking with all the leather on their gun belts and their whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of them, and they're young men, neither of them are wearing a mask. Now, these are people who are the physical manifestation and the outward projection of governance and authority in any given county.
A law and order, yeah.
Right, but they don't have to wear a mask. Right. And they come in contact with more people who are more likely to probably have or be spreading the virus than just about anybody else in this county and in this state. But our sheriff won't tell his deputies to wear their damn masks. And yes, people are wearing them in Kroger's and in Walmart. They don't wear them when they go into Dollar General because nobody in Dollar General will tell them to put on their mask. And they're not wearing them going into the convenience stores. And they are damn sure not wearing them in the bars.
And if you're a sheriff's deputy, you know that there aren't going to be a whole lot of people to go, hey, buddy, you know, put it on. Was it last night's show where you had somebody, one of your callers said, you know, what he does now is he loudly remarks to his wife, I think, you know, can you believe that idiot doesn't know how to read, you know, to the big signs on the door?
Yeah, I think that was Steve in Georgistan.
Yeah. So that could be somewhat effective because at the very least you could play innocent if confronted. It's like, well, I was just talking to my wife. You know, what are you doing listening to my conversations? Why don't you mind your business? But you know,
we could put teeth behind this. I mean, Jim Justice doesn't know what to do. He could say, listen, we're going to start passing out tickets and you're going to be paying them tickets. I mean, my God, the cost.
Remember those?
Yeah. Yeah. The cost for not wearing your mask in Australia can be upwards of $1,000.
Yeah, that'll do the trick.
And I guarantee you another place they're not wearing their masks. They're not wearing their masks in their churches.
Oh yeah.
Cause they're in there singing in Hosanna into the, till the walls shake.
Jesus wants to see their faces. And they might see Jesus a little sooner than they had reckoned for if they don't wear that mask. But it's 8:02, Bob. What are we doing?
Well, I guess we will push it out to another day.
I think so. I'm not in the mood for another filibuster myself.
No.
And I think, like I said, sometime before Christmas, maybe we should have a special Christmas party edition of the show. Maybe we talk about, I don't know. I'm planning too far ahead, I suppose.
You know what might be fun? As the Christmas season approaches, and if you have time.
And holiday season, by the way.
Yeah, holiday season. Yes, indeed. You're right.
Yes.
But let's pick out some, and maybe do this on a weekend, not within the 3 hours of the program.
Okay.
Let's pick out some, a couple of great, Christmas movies.
Yeah, it's okay. Another Christmas movies.
Yeah.
It's okay to acknowledge Christmas. That's the thing.
Yeah, but let's and maybe have some sort of Zoom or whatever viewing party. We'll all queue it up at the same time. We'll all watch it together and have a blast that way.
We know that the obvious one is the one with Jimmy Stewart and that takes place in Bedford Falls. Maybe it could be something.
You know, one of my favorites, and I think I've mentioned this to you in the past, and the cast is magnificent, Christmas in Connecticut.
Which I've never seen.
I love that one. I love that.
Has Darlene in Connecticut seen Christmas in Connecticut?
I would like to think so, but, I don't know how that isn't the official state Christmas movie of Connecticut.
Before we go, and I think we should, by the way, Darlene, I apologize. I had, like many promises, they're made in a moment of passion and then quickly and easily forgotten. But I had promised that I would post a photo of the pizza from Agnello's in in New City, New York, on my Facebook page, since I had to leave a little early on the Election Eve show. I did not do that because I have the attention span of a tsetse fly. But the next time we're ordering pizza, if you want, I'll put it up there and see if anybody really cares. But anyway, I owe you an apology for yet another broken promise. But I have my reasons. See, I did that. I gave you an apology. I did a callback there.
Yes, that's exactly what you did. And Greg just chimed in to say, bestest ever Christmas movie is Die Hard.
Yeah. You can say the same about Gremlins. I mean, you've got that great, but you know what? But you're right. I think Die Hard really is a Christmas movie because they use the music all throughout it, different Christmas things. Ho, 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 I've got a gun. That's pretty damn festive.
Well, and you know where I come down? I still say that one of the most underappreciated Christmas movies of all time is The Lion in Winter. I mean, for God's sakes, it's set.
Yeah.
It's set at Christmas. It's a family being classically dysfunctional at the holidays. What more do you need? And mommy and daddy arguing over which child they like best. Come on. I mean, it's literally what Christmas is all about.
That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
Exactly. And Darlene says, no problem, Dan. I'd love to see a pic of the pizza the next time you order it. Signed, Darlene from Connecticut. I created a problem by saying Connecticut, but, you know, words have to be pronounced.
Once you go down the road, it's hard to come back.
Yeah, it is. It is. All right. Well, you've got your evening meds coming up at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And by the way, just one thing on the way out the door. Are you doing all your appointments via telemedicine and everything? You're still getting good results from the doc and everything. I do have to check in on that, you know.
Good results. I actually did an in-person visit because I had to have a CAT scan back in, what was it? Maybe it was October or late September. But my next one will be televisit. And I'm doing the whole blood sample thing now where my DNA gets measured. All of that's done at home. It's pretty amazing what they do now. I'm grateful for everything as usual.
Well, Agnes and I have hillbilly visits that we have to make in person here in a couple of, well, I think it's about 8 days from now. And we're not looking forward to that, but we'll still do it. But it gives me the creeps.
Don't be afraid to be that guy. And I say this to all of you listeners. You know, one thing, whenever I have gone out in something resembling public, I've always been very good about just saying 6 feet, please, 6 feet, please. And if somebody doesn't have a mask, I give them a lot of room, and if I see that somebody won't distance, I'll just keep backing up, or I won't even enter the room. You know, I'm going to be tough about this stuff. I'm going to be as strict as they come, because it's not just about me and the immunosuppressed; it's about all of us.
Sure, and, it is.
We can't let our guard down.
But I would like to make you aware of something that a dear friend of the program, Paul from Parts Unknown, who is a real live, no kidding scientist working in a lab that has to do with COVID-19 and making the components of the tests and everything.
Yeah.
In one of his last communiques, he emphasized as strongly as he possibly could, 6 feet is not enough.
Absolutely, it's not.
Make your initial distance 10 or 15 if you possibly can, because of what we're finding out about the aerosolization of the virus.
Right.
And its ability to linger in the air longer than we thought and travel in the air further than we thought.
Right. Right. I will not go into a store. I have that luxury. We've talked about that. And so I don't. I have gone out in something resembling public when it's been an outdoor type of thing. I've had COVID tests for my work in an outdoor set up with a tent, and there is a case, for example, where I insist on space being made. I pick up ice cream at a local place that is still open, and I make sure that 6 feet is adhered to, and if it isn't, I open my mouth. I'm that guy. I don't care. I got nothing to lose. You want to get out your gun. I don't care. Shoot me. Doesn't matter. I'm going to still maintain
that you're an asshole if you don't maintain 6 feet at least. And if you don't wear a mask, I'm going to let you know. Because I'm 56. I've had a heart put into my chest. What am I afraid of at this point? Nothing. Nothing scares me.
Yeah, that little boy who was afraid to get into a fight back way back then.
Nah.
That's over.
That little boy, that's done.
All right, Dan.
Still not hit. No.
You have a wonderful evening. Give our fondest regards to the lovely Helene and say hi to the kids for us. The kids sure. That aren't kids. And
I know.
Let's bounce around this idea of maybe a weekend movie viewing or something.
I think that's great. Yep, you've got all the info. Contact me. I'll contact you. We'll brainstorm.
If you get there first, you make a mark. If I get there first, I'll rub it out.
What? You'll rub it out? Who do you think you are? What's his name? Tumor?
Yeah, no, I'm not Jeffrey Toobin. You don't know that. Wait, you don't know that great the Three Stooges routine?
No, but just the phrase "rub it out."
I know. It obtains new meaning now in the modern world, but it used to just be ridiculously funny, you know, from an absurd standpoint. If you get there first, you make a mark.
And listen, we can also call sometime or write sometime just to be friends and talk to one another too. We established that last time around too.
We absolutely can.
It doesn't all have to be on public consumption.
Right. Indeed.
Wait, it's 8:10. People should live other lives now. I'm gonna go.
Sounds good, Dan. Again, thanks for the creative efforts and thanks for the honor of letting Agnes and me be part of its premiere.
Agnes, I love you more today than yesterday. Thank you for doing that.
I think she had fun. I'm pretty sure. She's probably
she's probably
in the living room blushing. Dan, take care.
Bye.
Bye now. That's our buddy Dan Fisher. The one and only. And I have yet to have a conversation on air with Dan or off air with Dan that I have not found to be an absolute delight. So I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did and as much as Dan did and as much as Agnes did. I know you enjoyed hearing from Agnes because I got the emails to prove it. So thank you all very kindly for keeping this program on the air for going on 2 decades. Thank you for your subscriptions via Patreon and PayPal. Thank you for your a la carte contributions. Thanks to all of you who participate to one degree or another in one, two, or all three sometimes. We got $15 to go to finish Chris's Fuck Donald Trump with a Great Big Rainbow-Colored Poker Challenge, and then $100 to go for Yuki's. I think we can do this, and hopefully the overnight crew will jump in on it. Thank you again. Friday on the front porch tomorrow. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Brand new Malloy on the way in a scant 47 minutes, if you're listening live, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the horn. HeadOn.live is the best place to listen to the Malloy program live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And like Dan and I were talking about, please stay safe, and the best way to stay safe is to stay home. If you can't and you have to be out, and I understand that because I'm one of those people, well, do everything you possibly can to protect yourself. Wear your mask, wash your hands. Wearing gloves is still a good idea. Take hand sanitizer with you wherever you go and use it frequently. Maintain your social distance, again, as previously noted, not 6 feet, but 10, 15, 20 even, if you can. Because people like, well, Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice, he's done all he can, and he don't know what else he can do. So we're on, I guess that means the hillbillies are on our own. And in fact, if some great big old rumbling, tumbling, bumbling tub of Trump love comes towards you saying, I have, in no way, shape, form, or fashion can I do anymore. I've done all I know how to do. Avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later, y'all.